3, and Urban. That's not it.
What is that other thing that you have saved there?
John Mayer.
That's John Mayer? What is it? John Mayer won't sue us. He likes us. You can play.
I'm going to start from scratch.
Why?
Because the MP3 recorder is not.
Do you open
your okay. Ready? Go.
Do you open your show with Your Body is Wonderland?
Yes. My body is Wonderland, bro. Don't hate.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Take 3. Folks, this is a fucking ghetto podcast, all right? This is how we rock it. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Eddie Ift has joined us, ladies and gentlemen. Please give it up for Eddie Ift. That's IFFT. You can find him on Twitter. He's a hilarious stand-up comedian and a good pal of mine. And we are sponsored by the Fleshlight. Before we go any further, go to joerogan.net, click the link, and type in the name Rogan, and you get 15% off. It's fucking a fabulous masturbation tool, Mr. Ift. I know you're not into those things. You know, you're a wholesome gentleman. You're not the type of boy.
I even go dry.
You go dry? I go dry, too.
Dry?
I feel like when I put lube in my hand that I'm really committing to beating off, and it's like, what's wrong with me?
I can't even do dry.
Dry, I feel like I can just get in and get out when I need to.
Yeah, but when I do the Fleshlight, you have to use lube.
With the Fleshlight, do they have, like, celebrity vaginas and
yes,
stuff?
Yes, yeah, sure. Of course
awesome.
They do.
Yeah, that's God, great.
They've thought of it all.
Yeah.
They have alien vaginas, like Meg blue Ryan. Ones that look like Avatar bitches, but it's not Avatar, of course. It's alien, because if it's Avatar, they'd have to pay.
I hung out with the Fleshlight guy last night. Had a great time. Saw Chuck Liddell. It was cool.
Yeah, if he's in town next week, we're going to get him. He doesn't work for Fleshlight anymore. He quit. He opened up his own company.
Yeah, that's right.
Do they have any, like, really, really obscure, like, people? Like
obscure porn stars?
Yeah,
I'm sure they
like,
do.
Like, weird,
I haven't looked through the catalog.
Shit that you can, like...
Yeah, even though I'm a part of the company, I have not looked through the catalog.
Yeah, they have Lupe.
You know, like, I was Fleshlighting with Roseanne Barr's vagina.
Oh, God. I bet she would do it. Roseanne would probably do it. I bet Rosie O'Donnell might do it, too. But there's a lot of lesbians that would do it just to
with,
think that
Rosie's,
someone's out there using their vagina properly.
With Rosie's, you'd have to take 2 Fleshlights and just rub them together.
Fleshlight humor.
Eddie Ift is also on a podcast called, you guys call it Talking Shit, is that what
yeah,
it is?
Talking Shit with Jim Jeffries and
with
Eddie
Jim Ift. Jeffries and Eddie Ift. And recently you guys got fucked because I guess you swore in your iTunes.
Yeah, just our title. Like, we had
a title for the episode?
Well, we had one title once that was called, I Guess I'm Gonna Have to Eat This Dude's Cunt, was one of them, where a guy named Brian McCarthy told us a story about how he fucked a post-op transsexual.
Whoa.
And he was telling the story about how she told him she used to be a dude.
Before he fucked her,
but he said he was already, like, so into it that he was like, all right.
Oh, my
and
God.
And they're having a threesome with her, and the dude's getting a blowjob, and he's like, I'm looking at the back, and he goes, and I realize, I guess I'm going to have to eat this dude's cunt.
Oh,
and
God.
So we titled it that. And
so he did?
Yeah, he did. Oh, he
went
tells
down.
Us, oh, it's our episode 3. We still think it's our funniest episode.
What is this guy's name again?
Brian McCarthy. He actually lives right out here. He's crazy.
Brian McCarthy. Is he a comic?
Sort of. He hosts all these things. He's got a show on National Lampoon Radio. He's the funniest. If he came in a room with a bunch of comics, every comic would go, that's the funniest guy in the room.
Really?
Fucking
wait a minute,
hilarious.
Wait a minute. Okay. What if Joey Diaz in that room?
I'm telling you.
You can't tell me there's a guy alive that's funnier than Joey Diaz.
Sounds like a challenge, though.
Joey
that
Diaz,
sounds like nonsense.
Joey Diaz would find this guy really funny.
Really?
He's fucking weird. There's no way to explain him.
I believe you, but I don't believe he's funnier than Joey Diaz. I don't think that's possible.
He's like this fat guy that he's got a wife and kids, normal life, but he directs
really?
Porn on the side, and he wears pink polo shirts and, like, white bucks, and he's, you know, he's got, like, this secret life that he leads. And
maybe
he,
you shouldn't be talking about it on the podcast.
On our podcast, he told a story about smuggling weed from Jamaica in boomboxes and getting arrested and having to go to jail for 2.5 months.
In Jamaica?
No, when he got to America. And he went to jail, and he stayed in jail for 2.5 months rather than call his parents to get him bailed out because he didn't want his mom to know. So
holy
he was just going to sit it out and let his mom think he was in Jamaica.
Oh, my God.
He's just a fucked up funny.
How old was he when this happened?
Like 20 years old. And he
oh,
just
my
went,
God.
I'd just rather take 2.5 months in prison.
Jesus Christ. So he's just wired crazy.
Yeah.
And damn, that's a dude that will fucking keep a secret, though. That's a guy that I'd want working for me.
Yeah.
Two and a half months in jail
yeah.
instead of telling his mom.
Yeah.
That's a fucking soldier right there.
Yeah, we got a soldier.
Brian McCarthy, huh? Yeah, that's his name? And Brian, it's episode three of your podcast.
Episode
we can hear
three.
This. And then, I need to hear this now.
And then we have on our show, yeah, it's one of the funniest stories you'll ever hear in your
really?
Whole life. I swear to God. He's talking about fucking the pussy and he's like, it felt like frozen gummy bears. That's the only thing I can describe. Because
oh,
like, I think God. They didn't get rid of all the dick meat. They just stuffed it up there. And he's like, so I'm fucking... And he goes, now if I tell you this pussy just looked like a sloppy mess, you should have seen the asshole. But I couldn't get any friction in the pussy because I guess the doctor didn't do a good job. So I'm pinching the pussy down and I'm fucking the... I mean, it's just...
Oh, he fucked this guy in his asshole?
Oh, he did everything.
Oh, my God. Wow. Jesus Christ.
Oh, he's a mental
And he's
gay.
Not even gay?
Not at all.
What the fuck is that about?
He told a story about how he let a guy blow him one time because he was out with this... and he's not a good-looking dude. He was out with this like supermodel chick, like really hot, like famous Playboy model. And they were out and they were all doing coke and partying. And she goes, I'll let you do anything you want to me if you let this guy suck your dick.
Whoa.
And he went, well, he goes, what do I have to lose? He goes, if I like it, then I'm gay. He goes, that solves a lot of problems for me in life. He's like, so I let the guy do it. And apparently the guy that did it's this famous writer for Vanity Fair. And he let the guy suck his dick, and he said, as soon as I felt the growth, the stubble of his beard hit the base of my cock, he goes, I've never gone so limp in my life. And he goes, I went, I'm not gay!
Now, did he fuck the chick afterwards?
He did fuck the chick afterwards. Or he said maybe he was too coked up to fuck her that night, but he got to afterwards.
But so the guy went, he went limp, meaning that he was hard before the stubble hit him.
She got him hard or something. It was a crazy fucking story. This dude knows how to party.
Wow. No, he doesn't.
No, I do not want to party with
him. He does not know how to party. That guy's an idiot. She sucked had a guy suck his dick. That's not a guy who knows how to party.
No,
that's
no.
silly.
He's,
I would rather not fuck that girl.
You know
that girl has a lot of outrageous demands.
You know who he's friends with? He's friends with the dude who's a pretty amazing dude to me too that owned Consumption Junction. Do you remember that website?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, I went to Arizona to do
it's
shows.
It's all like crazy stuff, right?
Yep.
Consumption Junction
yeah.
is all like car accidents.
Is that
accidents
still around?
No, I don't know if it is, but the dude sold the website and made millions of dollars. But
powerful.
He's his best friend, and I went to Arizona to Scottsdale or whatever, Tempe, to do shows there.
Right.
And he's like, let me call my friend. He'll show up at your show. So the dude shows up and sits down and starts telling me stories. He's like, so I'm in Panama. And because, you know, there's no extradition laws there and we're doing mountains of coke and we're fucking these girls and I'm pissing all over them and we're all in the shower and there's 8 girls for me and 8 girls for my friend. And like these guys just live in a world that like they make movies about.
And, shit.
And they tell me these stories and I'm like, are they lying to me to impress me because I'm
no.
a comic? And then you see his website and you go, oh, okay.
There's guys that are doing that. There's these Joe Francis type characters that are, you know, like that guy is notorious.
I think these guys are beyond that. This
really?
Dude now owns a website called Sugar Sugar.
It depends on how much money you have. It really does. If you're a sociopath and you got $1 billion, you can do some damage.
Yeah.
You can just go out there and ball all the time. I know some people that are big finance people that back in the early days of the UFC, and these guys said tons and tons of money. This guy was ugly as fuck. This guy used to travel all over the country just banging chicks, and he'd always tell me stories about being in Ibiza and being in, you know, Russia and being here. And he's just a fucking 20th century baller.
That's awesome.
This guy was just roaming the country, roaming the world, rather, just everywhere, party. And especially if you go to other countries.
Yeah.
In other countries, people just fuck. Okay?
That's a guy
it's
I
not
want
like
to hang
America.
Out with.
Well, yeah. I toured.
America's a different rap. And you know that because you go to Australia like
well,
6 months a year.
I toured for about 6 years. Extensively around the world, like doing China and Dubai and all these South Africa, and I saw some shady, shady shit. Like you just start finding out, like prostitutes are $50 around the world.
Wow.
And I was at a party one night in Dubai where everyone was so fucked up. They went, "Oh, let's get hookers." And when we found out they were $50, we were like, "Well, let's get 10 each." and it was like we didn't even want to have sex with
Whoa.
Them. It was like
just
it
so
was just
it.
Out of like you know like it started with. Well, I don't $50. I just want them to come over and listen to my jokes.
Like you created your own audience.
Like, and then
everybody
like,
gets 10. We've got 30 people. That's a decent night in the OR.
Imagine having an audience you could fuck afterwards.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Well, this is what happened. I'm not going to mention the names because some of them are you know, comics that work here, but there was a whole bunch of comics and everybody started upping the ante. They're like, I want to just have them come over and fucking pour maple syrup all over them and we're going to swim around the fucking bathroom floor. I want to put Pringles on.
This is in Dubai?
This was in Dubai.
Did you guys worry about being arrested? Because they have some really crazy laws over there.
From the minute we got there till the minute we left on this trip, we were so fucked up that it never occurred to me. And then my next trip over, I got fucked up in customs and thought I was never coming back.
What happened?
I didn't have the proper visa, and I tried to leave. I missed my flight because I was all fucked up. Oh, this was the same trip. On the way back, I tried to leave. Like, the other two comics got on the plane. I missed the plane out of just being so fucked up. I was in an internet cafe. I missed the plane, and then I'm like, fuck, the next flight's not for 24 hours to London. So I try to leave the airport to go to a hotel, and my visa was only good for like 3 or 4 days or whatever. So they checked my visa, they checked my passport, and they didn't match because my agent fucked up.
Oh,
My agent put my middle name or something on it somehow.
And you easily could be a spy too. Look at you.
Yeah.
Spy look to him.
Yeah. Guy just took my passport, walked away, and I never saw my passport again until 24 hours later. Wow. So I'm without a passport. The next thing I know, I'm in an office. Next thing I know, fucking strip search. They've gone through everything in my bag. They've gone through my computer. When they open up my computer, my heart started beating so fast that I'm like, because pornography is illegal in the Middle East.
Oh.
And they tell you, don't buy porn. The guys are going to try to sell it to you in the streets. Don't buy it. They could be spies.
So they looked in every folder in your laptop?
They opened my laptop. And when they opened it, I was just like, this is
holy
it. I'm going to be in fucking prison, a Middle Eastern prison for the rest of my life because I downloaded like topless car wash angels. You know, like that's this is fucked. And I had called my girlfriend at the time because they kept making me go like before they like – kind of held me in this office. They were like, go to this office. And I'd go to this office. They'd be like, go to this office. And I kept walking down hallways. And they're like, go down this hallway. And they make me walk down this hallway. And there's a big sign that says, like, nobody is allowed past this point. No one at all. Like, whatever. In English, it said it. And I'm like, they told me, go down that hall. And I'm like, I'm not going down that hall. Like, they're setting me up or something.
Right.
So I call her on the phone. I've got my cell phone.
Oh, that's crazy.
And I go, listen, I'm fucked. I don't know what's going on, but if you don't hear from me in 2 hours, call the U.S. Embassy and tell them I'm in trouble. I said, something's fucked up here. And Dubai is supposed to be like the most progressive place in the world.
What?
But I mean,
no, it's not.
Not in the world, but I mean in the Middle East. Of the Middle Eastern countries.
It's, yeah, but that's just because they want the money.
Exactly.
They want tourism. They want it to be Vegas of the desert.
Yeah, they look the other way. You see shit like Russian hookers barbecuing sausages on the beach, like topless. And you're like, wait a minute.
This is
a fucking Muslim country. Yeah.
But I've heard of people have been arrested that were making out there. So it's just subjective? Like they decide when to enforce
that
it?
That was Sex in the City, wasn't it?
No. It was a real couple. A real couple was making out.
There's weird fucking shit. Like we had drinks, beers on our van. And I was over there another time shooting a documentary. And we had beers on the van after we shot one night. And we had a female like that worked for the Emirates with us. And the next day we find out, like, we're in big trouble. We drank around a female. We were swearing. There was all kinds of shit. And they're like, you broke every, like, Sharia law possible. You fucked up.
There's evidence of this?
Well, it was kind of like, because I was over there with, like, a guy who's really important. His father is, like, the attorney for the Emirates.
Right.
And so it was kind of like, you guys are okay, but don't fuck up again.
So do you have a mark against you now? So if you go to Dubai now,
I'm never going again. We filmed one thing where I put on a dish dash, which is the Islamic, well, not Islamic, but just the garb that they wear
right
in Dubai, and you know it's the white gown and the hat and everything. And
they gave me one of those when I did the UFC in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, and a buddy of mine just wore them around town. We thought it was kind of funny, and we're just
right.
And we kept asking people, like, we're okay, right? We're not breaking any law. And they're like, no, it's not religious. It's just the clothing that people wear. And then the girl that worked for the Emirates left the Emirates and sent me an email telling me that there were spies watching us the whole time. And I was like, just fuck this shit. I don't need to go back there.
Yeah, who was it that was telling us? Pete Johansson was telling us that he did gigs in Dubai, and there was members of the secret police would sit in the audience and watch.
Yeah.
They and they would be in the front row, and they'd be totally obvious. I think I don't remember if he said the front row. He might have said the back row. Whatever he said, they were super obvious, and they were standing there with their arms crossed, just staring at him the whole time. Yep. So he's trying not to cross any lines, trying not to say
what's
any...
What's the lines? You can't cuss?
No. You can say anything you want. Things. They don't want you making fun of Islam.
Remember when we had what's-his-face, Hal Sparks, and he was talking about almost getting arrested? Right. He was doing gigs with John Lovitz, and he made a mistake of one of the sultans or one of the sheikhs, and he called him, what do you call him, monsieur? Monsieur, yeah. I think he said that, called him the French name for Mister, and apparently one guy got incredibly offended and, called the religious police, and people showed up, and they were going to fucking put him in jail for this.
I seriously think I could make a movie about my weekend, the one weekend I went there.
It's real scary when there's other parts of the country where you travel like that, where we get used to behaving and thinking you have a certain amount of freedom. You know what you do here? This is an entirely free country. You know, weed's still illegal. You can't say, I want to kill the president, or if you do, they'll lock you up. Obviously, it was in character when I said that.
The president of Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Certain things you can't say. It's not completely and totally free. But for the most part, it's pretty easy to get along here. But if you go to other parts of the world, they're incredibly suppressive.
Incredibly.
Especially the Middle East.
Yeah, terrifyingly.
That's one of the things I am most certainly not for war and not into this war, which I think is a fucking shady war and shady as fuck how we got into it. But... we have to be very careful about the rise of Islamic power all around the world. The rise of Sharia law. We have to be careful of any kind of religious zealots, whether Christian zealots or Muslim zealots, or anytime people that think they can lock you up and they have the right to because you were having fun. You were out dancing. You were out drinking.
I have to say
that's some scary shit.
I've always been not anti-American, but I always rail against the government on all things. But when I got over there and this kind of shit happened, that's when you start to really appreciate your country.
Yeah.
That you go, I could call the embassy and they would take care. Like, they fight for you. It's
sure.
Like, all right,
that's what they're supposed to do. They're United States citizens, I mean, we pay taxes. That's what it's all about. That's the benefits of being a part of the team. But it's just fucked up that we have to think about that anywhere. United States it's not perfect. It's fuck corrupt as shit, super corrupt. The business of government is gigantic. There's a billion different jobs out there that literally don't need to exist. They exist to keep the jobs going, to keep the business of government going. And it creates quagmires and fucking complex little social situations.
That's why I always say to people, I think it's funny when people criticize the president. I'm like, I'm not an Obama fan, but I'm not against him. I don't believe in the whole political system. But I love people that criticize
him. Like, he's the one who's in charge.
He fucked everything up.
He's so silly.
It's like WW Raw, the whole political system.
Exactly.
And Vince McMahon's the corporations running it all.
Yeah.
But people that criticize, like a guy, Obama and his healthcare. I'm like, dude, you can't even fucking return your videos to Blockbuster on time.
It's a general lack of understanding about the system, which I think most people have. And even me, I'll get into it. I'll focus on it for a couple of months. And then I'll go, what am I doing? What am I paying attention to? I'm paying attention to this stupid hustle, this fake thing that barely, what goes on in Washington barely affects your day-to-day life. What goes on in your neighborhood? What goes on with your friends? What goes on in your world? The people that you interact with, that's what affects your life. If you get really too hung up and dealing with Washington and politics and Democrats and Republicans and thinking you understand that system, what's ridiculous.
I used to work for a senator. And,
really?
It was my first job.
Where?
I worked for Arlen Specter.
Get the fuck out of here.
Swear to God.
That evil cunt. That guy was on the Warren Commission report.
Dude, I could tell you. I started interning for him in college.
Wow.
And it was like... I thought I wanted to go into politics or something, and then I realized I thought that I had the shady side that was good for politics,
right?
But I was like, there's no fun involved. It's just a fucking torturous, horrible. And they are everyone says it's poor man's Hollywood. Spectre had hair plugs, facelift, fucking, you know.
Of course,
like,
you have to appear virile to your audience.
And he was just like, and he was the ugliest dude in the world. And
he's an evil fuck, man.
But when he would explain his single bullet theory, if he would sit and explain it to you after he does it, you would believe him.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't, because I've seen the bullet. The dumbest thing about the single bullet is the bullet itself. It has almost no damage, went through two people, shattered bone. And it's barely dented.
But I'm telling you, in his presence, he has this way of convincing you.
Incorrect. I would not be amused or affected by that dummy. There's no way. That guy's an evil fuck. There's no way I would listen to him and be impressed.
Is he charming? Or
no.
Is he?
Not in the least. It was one of those things where I was like, how the fuck did this guy get into politics? He was like,
all you have to do is be in, dude. Once you're in, it's like being a writer on a sitcom.
Yeah.
You know, when you work on a sitcom, one of the things you find out about working on sitcoms is there's usually a few brilliant writers and these fucking fakes. These people that aren't really funny at all. What? Like, they were never stand-up comedians. Someone somehow or another got them a job as a comedy writer, and now here they are on sitcoms. You deal with them over and over and over again, and you realize all you have to do is just get into the system. Once you get into the system, then you get other jobs.
I gave that speech once. I got a deal a long time ago to do a sitcom, and it was going to be about my life. And I used to live with my sister in New York for a while, and they thought that was funny. You know, that's the point of view. Ooh, we'll make a show about it.
Right.
And so I met with writers, or first I met with all the development guys, and they were like showing me the writers they were going to give me. And they gave me the script of these guys, and I went, this is shit. This is shit. And my manager at the time was like, shut the fuck up. Take the money.
Who's your manager?
Shut up. At the time, it was Kerry Hoffman.
Kerry Hoffman.
Out of New York. He owned Stand Up New York.
Oh, my God. Stand Up New York. Yeah. Didn't Kerry, like, he would get, like, people would get sitcoms, and he would want a piece of the sitcom because they used to work out of his club?
Yeah.
And that's hilarious. Listen to that. The guy was a manager of a fucking or owned a comedy club. The comics would go up and they'd perform at his club, and one guy got a development deal. And he wanted like a certain percentage of this guy's sitcom
because
he used to practice at his club.
Oh, that's fucking stupid.
It's amazing.
And he didn't get it though, did he?
Of course not. Of course not.
He tried really hard.
Amazing that he would even chase after that. So I'm sorry. So this guy tells you to shut the fuck up.
He's like, shut the fuck up and take the money. And I'm sitting in the meeting and I said, no offense. I said, I understand, you know, that you think these guys are good writers and everything. I said, but I know this whole system, what goes on. Guys get in and they get their buddy in and he can't write. But then they've been there for 10 years and you don't realize they never wrote anything good. They were just there and now they get to be a showrunner. I said, I've got millions of friends that write funnier than this. Can I just go out and get one of them? And Jim and I are in that situation right now where they're trying to do a show with us right now, and it's like we feel like we could write the show.
There was a time when I had a development deal where there's two guys that were writing for friends. They were the creators of Friends, and one of them branched out on his own, and I got this development deal. And it was for Fox, and it was a good amount of money. And so they really wanted this guy to do it because this guy had like such a great background. Well, often what happens is when there's a team of writers, you got one brilliant guy, and the other guy is this fucking buddy that you bounce shit off of, you know? And so the brilliant guy is bouncing shit off the other guy, and then they put it all together, like maybe the other guy types, and they become a team.
So
well, then
one bounced.
Somewhere along the line, the other guy says, you know what? I think I'm unrecognized. My talent precedes my friend. I'm much better. So this fucking idiot decides he's going to go out on his own. So he gets this giant development deal. It was for
It was
Michael Eisner's company, and it was a fucking huge development deal. Millions and millions of dollars. Everybody was like banking on this guy. And so I go to meet with the guy. They want me to meet with him. I meet with him and he's wearing bowling shoes. And whenever I see a guy who's trying to be wacky, you know, you're wearing bowling shoes aren't comfortable. Those are uncomfortable as fuck. Like, why are you wearing those? You're wearing those to let me know that you're nutty. You know, I might be a multimillionaire, but I wear bowling shoes to the office. Did you just get done bowling? No, you're trying to send a message. And the message is you're dressing like you think a funny person would dress. That tells me you're probably not fucking funny. So I immediately get terrified. I'm like, oh, this guy is a fucking a faker. He snuck through. There's no way. There's no way. How could he get this fucking gigantic multi-million dollar deer if he snuck through? So I meet with the guy. We talk. He has an idea. He wants me to be a part of it. Blah, 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 blah. We meet. And then they give me one of his scripts. The script that I read is fucking terrible. I mean, it's just god-awful. There's nothing funny in it at all. And I'm like, well, maybe this is just, you know, just a shit script. Maybe he's got some other ones. Maybe there's a spec. Maybe they had him write this, you know, and it wasn't a subject that he was interested in. So this guy comes up with this is his idea for a sitcom. A sitcom is about an immortal. It's about a man who's immortal, okay? And he exists since like Egyptian days, and all he does is like get laid.
That's
fucking devoid of comedy. Who wants to watch a sitcom about an immortal, a guy who's an immortal, has been immortal since the Egyptian days, and all he does is try to get laid?
I don't understand all these hooks in these sitcoms. When you look at like the best sitcoms that have ever existed, the jobs or whatever they do, it's so like superfluous. All you need is a group of people that hang out together and have relationships with each other and the interesting relationships. If you look at like Taxi and Cheers, and you could move them to any other setting and they would be funny. You know, you put them in an office.
Didn't matter what this guy did. Well, this guy was not funny. Yeah. It didn't matter if he wrote about three people hanging out at a laundromat or three people who work on the moon.
He just didn't
have a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
He just snuck in.
That show never made it out though, right?
No, of course it didn't. And I had to tell them. We had a meeting and it was a real controversial meeting. It was like, they were upset at me because I was like, this guy sucks. And they're like, this guy does not suck. This guy is he's this, he's that, he's done all these things. And I'm like, he's not funny. I'm telling you, this guy's not funny. This is a mistake. They're like, you don't understand. There's more to writing than just being funny. There's character development and story arcs. And he's a guy who really understands that. And we can bring in more funny later. But what he's really concerned with is what we're concerned. We want a really good story. The story was deaf. It was terrible. It was stupid. It didn't make any sense. It was just like a guy who's pretending to be a comedy writer who got a job writing comedy. It's like if you took some fucking guy who worked for a fence company, you know, I'm tired of writing fences. I think I'm a good writer.
I've done it. I've been doing stand-up for 15 years, and it took me 14 and a half years to finally realize that 95% of the people in the business don't know anything about comedy.
Like, well, you can't really truly understand unless you're doing it.
And I've lately been putting them to the test where I'll say, well, explain to me why. And when you put them – like when you put them on the hot
explain
seat –
Explain why.
Say something like, why is that comic doing that, or why should he – why do you think he's good at what he does, or why isn't he good?
Are you asking agents, managers?
Yeah,
you asking
everybody.
Those types?
Yeah. Okay. Development people, talent scouts. Always do it. And I put them to it. And they'll go, well, you know, he does this really interesting thing where he's kind of like not really observational, but he's kind of political, but he's more on a surreal – I'm like – you have no fucking idea. You have no idea. You all are sheep and you just follow.
Well, it's not that. I think agents and managers are really important, but I think they really can't truly understand what comedy is all about unless they do it. You know, you do it, you're really never going to be an expert on it. You might know a lot about it, but you're never going to really truly understand it unless you can recreate it.
I have an agent out of Australia. I think he might have worked with you when you were down there, Artie Lang.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Same name as Artie Lang, Howard's guy, but same name. Artie is fucking like the greatest agent that has
ever. He's a great guy.
He's fucking amazing, and he knows comedy. He did comedy a little bit. And like you'll do a bit, and he'll go, why don't you say this? And you're like, yeah, that would actually work better. And I'll run my sets by him before I go on TV, and he's like, no, take that out, put that in. And he shit like.
I'm not saying that he can't have some understanding of comedy without doing it. You just can't really truly understand it. You know, you're never going to understand it the way a comic understands it. It's all theoretical until you put it in practice. It's like a guy who does kata in the gym is pretty sure he could fare well in a street fight.
Yeah.
You know, but really, he's not really sure. It's theoretical. Yeah. You know, a guy who's actually fought a bunch of times is like, yeah, I've been through this shit before. I know what I'm going to do. You know, there's a difference. But there's nothing wrong with agents and managers that don't understand it totally because they do a great job. You know, I wouldn't do it and you wouldn't do it. We're not going to sell ourselves. We're not going to go out and get development deals. We can't do it anyway. You can't negotiate for yourself. It's impossible, especially that and be creative. Like, it's important to have managers and agents, you know, but they don't have to know everything. They just have to shut the fuck up and push in the right direction if you're talented.
Yeah.
You know, well, the problem is when you're not that talented or when you're not doing that well, you haven't become successful yet, then they start tweaking you. Then they start, well, we've got to figure out what's going on here. What you need is a new look. You know, Jamie Masada told my friend Todd Parker that he had to be the Generation X guy. That's what he was saying. Buddy, you're Generation X guy. This is your new hook. You go on stage, everything come out of your mouth. Generation X. I am Generation X guy.
Have you IMDb'd that guy now lately, the friend's writer, just to see what kind of
I don't even remember his name. I don't remember his name. But I met a couple of those guys. I wrote something with one of those guys, a guy who wrote on Seinfeld. He was fucking terrible. He couldn't write anything funny. It wound up being me writing the funny stuff and him writing it down. It was a terrible relationship.
Kerry Hoffman did that to me, though, once. He tried to change me. He's like, I've got an idea. You never see comedy duos anymore. We get you and a girl. We get you and a girl, and you do, like, Stiller and Mira. It'll work.
God. Wow. Oh, my God. What an idiot.
Yeah. But
what is that guy still in the business?
I think so. Actually, he's doing really well because he's got Mike Royce and Tom Hertz, who are really good writers. And
yeah,
I think Tom might be on.
I always liked the guy. Doing his club is always nice to me. Tom, but when I heard that shit about him trying to get 15% from people,
he was kind of like a father to me. He was really good, and he actually did shit that was amazing. Some of the shit he did was the best stuff a manager ever did for me. When I went to Montreal to do New Faces, he sent a tape of me to every single person that wasn't going to Montreal. And I bombed at Montreal. Bombed. And so I was fucked. And then all the people that didn't go to Montreal saw a tape that was great. And were like, he's awesome.
What year was this?
This is 2000, I think.
So people were stopping going to Montreal by then.
It was just,
Montreal kind of died out around then.
My year of New Faces was, listen to this. It was me, Tony Rock, I believe, was in it. Dean Edwards, who got Saturday Night Live that year. Dimitri Martin, Mike Birbiglia. Russ Maniv, like everybody got something big out of it. And
so it was like the last year then.
It was the last year because Chicken was the year before.
Yeah, that was one I was going to bring up when we were talking about this. I think we brought up Chicken on the podcast before, didn't we?
I don't remember.
Well, Chicken, God rest his soul, is the most amazing phenomenon. And this is the proof that agents and managers have no fucking idea. They just don't get it. They don't know what's funny and what's not funny. Some of them don't, I should say. This guy, he was this young kid who was just real boyishly handsome, and he had this really wacky act. Like there was a screw loose in him, and he had this like really like completely over the top act that just would baffle comedians. They would go, "This is not funny at all." Example. I don't get it. Dude, it was all like stunts.
I'll give you one. I remember.
Props.
I auditioned for SNL with him. He went on stage and said, "So and so, when they hit a home run, did you ever see them? They just jog around the bases." He's like, they just casually jog around if they hit a home run. He's like, that was me? If I hit a home run, he'd be like, woo, what the fuck, yeah. And he'd like do like flips on stage and run around the audience and like throw his arms in the air and be like, I'd be flinging shit in the air out of my ass. And it was like, but people would almost like, you know, if you just see a crazy man jumping up and down in a nightclub, you're like, that dude's pretty crazy. That's what he was.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, he wasn't that talented. He tried really hard. Anyway, he wound up getting this giant development deal and just being a complete total bust. Like, they couldn't do anything with him. He was just not talented. It was just awful. And so he went into this sort of dark depression, and then comics hated him. Like, he was a punchline for comedians.
Yeah.
A bunch of them would just shit all over him. You know, I mean, you know how comics are. If one guy's doing better than you and you think he's not as good as you, it's just fucking venomous hate. Yeah. So this kid wound up killing himself in front of a school. He hung himself on a tree in front of a school.
What? Did he do that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I didn't know that part of it. I know. I heard the story when he was at Montreal, though. Like, there was so much hype on him going into Montreal that, that they were bidding on him before he even went on stage. And I think he did. As he was going on stage, someone said to his manager, like, one of the networks goes, like, we'll give you $1 million if he doesn't step on that stage. Because they knew his price would even go up once he went on stage. And
$1 million. No, well, his development deal was $500,000.
Oh, that was
I'm
it
pretty
then.
Sure that's what he got.
So they said, like, we'll give you $500,000 for
at least that's what the rumor was.
Not to go on stage because they didn't want the bidding to even go up further.
So I don't know. I think that's a lot of hype. Yeah, I don't think that really happened. That doesn't really – nobody does that. But there was a lot of people that were into this kid. And comics, we'd be standing in the back of the room watching this kid flail around on stage and, you know, like literally flail. Damn. You know, and like he was on fire and go, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah. Is there clips of him online, you think?
That's a good question.
Michael Ruth was his name, I think. I met him the night we did SNL. We were auditioning at Caroline's and we're all in the green room. And he comes into the green room and all the comics kind of know each other. And then he shows up in the green room and he's got this energy, you know, those energy like vampires that just suck all the energy away from everyone else. He starts bouncing around the room going, it's fucking crazy. I don't know what I'm fucking doing here. This is like SNL's here, and I'm fucking like, I'm not even a comedian. I don't know what you like. This is crazy. You guys like do your shit, and I just get up on stage and I'm like wacky and fucking crazy. And everyone was just kind of, you know, comics, we're all looking at each other like, dude, it was almost like he was psyching us out too.
Right.
Because we're all trying to, you know, this is a big deal for us. We're all trying to get on.
Right.
He's
bringing you into his head.
Yeah, and I thought that's what he was doing. And I'm like, you're fucking with me right now, and I'm about to punch you in the face. Like that.
So you thought he was doing it on purpose?
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm not going to put
up with it. Would someone really do that?
I think there are guys that are they kind of do that.
Really?
Yeah.
How would that work, though? That's a weird strategy to go out and... Did you get anything out of
it? I found some videos if you want to listen to one.
Yeah, let's listen to one.
I don't like comics that go...
Yeah, that's him, man.
You go, how's the room?
Does it say anything about him, how he's dead?
Yeah.
Did it say how he killed himself?
No. It just
says... You guys got a lot of white suburban gangster kids here. I ain't got a voice. You guys got a lot of white suburban gangster kids here. Know what I mean by white suburban gangster kids? 17-year-old Caucasian boys that look like me. Fuck you. Except that they're black and raised in the hood. They're all walking around the mall here. They got the pants hanging off their ass. Got the hat on. Cricket. Oh, shit. What's up, motherfucker? Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
He pulled his pants down.
It looked like a thong he had on.
What up, dog? We're like 3-pager cell phone, big ass fax machine. Got 45 pounds of gold, got a 7-gold chain, 3-gold ring, 2-gold teeth, and the whole fucking time his name's Bradley. Same kid that pulls up next to you downtown, playing that rap music loud as hell, acting tough as shit. Driving his mama's minivan. No, same kid that walks in the dance clubs doing all those booty dances. You know. Yeah. Fuck you, dude. You can't do it. Fuck that. Give me my booty shit. You fucked up and walked in. Oh, you just fucked up.
He pulled his pants down again. His name is Michael Roof, R-O-O-F. So, anyway, that's enough of that. Anyway, that's not terrible. I mean, it's not the worst comedy I've ever heard.
What's funny, when he was pulling down his pants the first time, he had taken his underwear and like gave himself a wedgie so it looked like he had a thong on. So it was like a little touch, a little extra touch there he did there. That was nice.
He jazzed up the bit. I like the tagline, the new butt crack tagline he added. You know, whatever, man. Nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's not my style. I'm not into it.
He was in like Black Hawk Down.
Really?
Yeah.
He had that big development deal, and then nothing happened for it. And then I remember so many people were so fucking happy when nothing happened to it, you know. And that's when it got really ugly for him. Like, comics were happy that he was failing, you know. And then there was like a lot of negative energy towards this.
But
kid.
They used him as an example. They said like he killed the development.
Yes,
deal.
He did. He did kill it. Because they gave him a ton of money, and that was it. What really killed it was their lack of real talent and ability to recognize talent.
Right.
You know, these comics or these agents and managers, they're really just taking guesses.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what killed it. What killed it was all these big people that spent a lot of money, and the people that were the head of studios, the people that, you know, they had a budget, and then they're like, why did we spend $500,000 on this fucking thing? Like, what is this? There's a lot of that going on, man. You know, like this, the Friends guy, if they sat that guy down and said, just write us a couple of scripts real quick. You know, let's look at your scripts. Let's look at your scripts.
They read their scripts and then...
Dude, they didn't read anything from this guy before he got this deal. I know they didn't. I know the whole story behind it. Everybody was so high on him. They just were willing to throw this guy money.
I've looked at a bunch of scripts lately and I'm like, really?
Death, right? Really? I can't do it. I've read a couple of them and I sigh and I look down at it and I go, no, I'm not even going in. I can't go in. I can't do this. You know, yeah, it would be nice to do a sitcom again. I love doing news radio. It was a lot of fun. But good luck trying to find another one of those. By the way, Dave Foley's going to do the podcast. Got in touch with Dave Foley.
No way.
Yeah, very excited. But, you know, it's like getting a hold of one of those sitcoms is like a fucking one in a million. And so if you don't do that, what are you dealing with? Well, you're dealing with a bunch of producers that don't really know how to do comedy. You're dealing with a bunch of writers. Most of them are not going to be talented, because if they were talented, they'd be working for Modern Family or some of those, you know, big shows. You know, there's not that many really good ones that are out there free.
Right.
You know? So it's like your odds of finding, you know, a good one are like 1 in 10, you know, maybe 1 in 20.
Yeah, I, Paul Provenza and I started writing a movie together on this idea that I had. And I met Paul in Edinburgh. I was doing the Edinburgh Festival, and I kind of did the thing as a bit. And he's like, what? And I said, oh, yeah, I've tried to write a movie about that. And he's like, yeah, you should write that fucking movie. He's like,
this is the bit that you said is the same as my bit, the one that I talked about on the show.
Very, very similar.
So was, I had a bit that I used to do. I did it back in the 90s. I just talked about it on the show the other day because we were both on the Green Room show together. And there was we were talking about like being booed off stage and like when people want you to change the subject you're talking about, like how people get upset at you. And I said that I used to do this joke about cloning Jesus. Because there was a thing called the Second Coming Project, and the Second Coming Project was
that's funny. That's what we named the script was the Second Coming, because it's all about the guy jerking off was the opening scene.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. there was a real thing that was in the news about this many, many years ago. Anyway, this the idea was they were going to take like DNA from the Shroud of Turin, and they were going to recreate Jesus. They were going to like clone Jesus. Clone. But and what my joke was like,
and this is cloning, a real thing. Like they really think they
sort of. I'm not sure. It might have been a parody. Oh. You know, there's a lot of those that sneak through. By the way, Rachel Maddow got busted on a parody the other day. She was reading a parody. This Christian, it's a fake website, and she was reading as if it was news. That Palin supporters really believe that, you know, we have to inject That's Christianity hilarious. Into North Africa. And it's really funny. My bit was, you know, like Dolly the Sheep, you know, when they cloned Dolly the Sheep, that shit didn't come out perfect. Like, cloning is not an exact science. Like, what do they do with the first Jesus if they clone him and he comes out retarded? Do you kill him and start from scratch? Or do you just, you know, and so there's this whole bit about it. And when I did it at the Comedy Store, some woman was yelling out, "Next subject!" Fat white woman with fat blonde hair and fat blonde fingers. Just that, you know, "I'm a Christian. Next subject." Oh. Like, she was so firm in her wonky beliefs that she wanted to stop
me. I love those people.
It's just a theoretical idea. I mean, it's not a real Jesus we're talking about. This is and it's a real legit question. If they really do clone Jesus, that's a goddamn legit question. Like, what if they found Jesus's bones and there was some DNA inside of it and they could extract it? They knew for sure it was Jesus. They knew it was his DNA. Well, that's a real legit question. What if he does come back retarded?
Because
he could come back all fucked up. There could be all sorts of. He could be autistic and psychopath. He could be black as fuck.
That's probably what it is.
What if he was?
That's what I think.
Jesus was black?
Yeah, because you can't start off white and then go black.
Well, there's a lot of evidence that Jesus wasn't even real. Yeah. There's a lot of evidence that there was no Jesus.
Based on mythology. Yeah,
and that this same mythology repeats itself over and over and over again. So Jesus, even as a historical figure, is in question. You know, there's like, you know, volumes of pages written about, you know, certain Caesars and certain, you know, rulers of Greece and Rome. So the stuff that's on Jesus is so, it's really hard to tell whether it's real.
Well, and also all those biblical fucking, you know, like everything from all the Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there was the book of Q. Do you know about that? There was a fifth book of the Gospels, apparently, that was that Luke based his book on. I'm not completely accurate in all this stuff, but if you start reading about it, you'll find out that, like, all four of them didn't live at the same time. Mm. So some of them base their account on the other ones because they'll say it's, like, identical of the other one.
Right.
So it's like they just basically
heard a story.
Yeah, and just rewrote it, which could have happened from the beginning. And then there was also, like, the Council of Nicaea where these guys went in and decided. The bishops all went, okay, well, we've got all these books. We're going to throw out these ones. We don't like these. We're going to keep the – they just rewrote history the way they wanted it. So, I mean, it's like shit like that. I'll never –
Well, if you find out about the New Testament, that's where things get really weird because Constantine and a bunch of bishops created the New Testament.
Yeah, that's the Council of Nicaea.
You know, we're talking about something that was way after Jesus' death, you know, if Jesus was a real figure. The whole thing is fucking squirrely, you know, the historical insanity. Account. Just, I mean, not even saying the religious account. The historical account is very squirrely. Yeah. I don't know, man.
You were saying something, though, about like Dolly being retarded. I've often wondered, like, you know, when, like, a dog bites someone, everybody's like, oh, he's a bad dog or whatever. I'm like, you see people all the time, like, people with Down syndrome. Are there, like, Down syndrome dogs?
Yes, mine's Down syndrome. Mine's really fucking.
Your dog's retarded?
Yeah, it's totally retarded.
Or your dog's just really, really overbred. You know, you have you have one of those little dogs.
Yeah.
What's it called again?
Pekingese.
Yeah, those dogs, man. Guess what? That came from a wolf.
Yeah.
There's no way you get a good example if that is what you get from a wolf.
I think my dog might be part wolf.
Really?
Yeah. She's an Aussie cattle dog.
Yeah.
And she's I grew up with Jack Russell Terriers. You ever see those little assholes? And they're
really aggressive because they used to kill rats.
They're fucking so aggressive.
Send them after rats.
We lived out in the woods, and these things would do. One of them went down I couldn't find him one night. I find him down a sewer under the road, and I'm looking down the sewer grate. I see him, and there's a pipe way down underneath that runs out to a creek. And I'm like, fuck, he ran up the pipe and he's under the sewer. There's no way for me to get him. I look down, he's got a raccoon cornered.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, fuck, he's dead. He's dead. This raccoon's just going to – and I'm just going, come on, like trying to coach him out the hole. And I'm screaming. And all of a sudden, I hear, and it goes. And I'm like, fuck, my dog's dead.
Right.
My dog's dead, and I'm shining a flashlight, and I don't see anything. Next thing I know, my Jack Russell drags the raccoon out of the pipe. My Jack Russell killed a raccoon.
Nice.
Now, cut to about a year ago, my dog's leashless all the time. People, you can call me an asshole, but I don't believe in putting a dog on a fucking leash. And my dog's well-behaved, and she's amazing.
It's not an asshole if the dog's well-behaved. Yeah. As long as you really know the dog and is well-behaved. It's when people walk around with, like, pit bulls without leashes. No, that's silly.
Yeah, my dog's amazing. And so
by the way, I used to do that. Like a retard.
When I get close to home, I'll go home. And she'll run like 200 meters up the road. So one night see this cat, and she never would hurt a cat, but she'll play with them. So I go, go, there's a cat.
You told her to chase the cat?
Yeah, but she just plays with the cats.
Son of a bitch.
So she goes running up the road, and all of a sudden I hear her go, and I'm like, oh, fuck. She's now fighting with a cat, and she's never fought before. And I come around the corner. It's not a cat. It's a fucking raccoon. And I'm like, fuck. And the raccoon takes off.
So you tore the chase after a raccoon thinking it was a cat.
Yeah. And
how did you mistake the raccoon?
It was so far away. It was like 200 yards away. So I wake up the next day, and my dog's sitting there, and her eyes are crusted shut. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I take her to the vet, and the raccoon scratched both her corneas.
Hey.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And the vet said, these things will rip your dog apart.
Shut your phone off, dude. It's the second time
they will.
Fucking junkie. Said texting and tweeting while he's trying to have some convoluted conversation.
They said they'll rip your dog apart. And I said, well, what about the rabies? And he said, rabies aren't bad in California. But
it's not bad.
But the raccoons are fucking
scary,
evil.
Man. Raccoon. When I lived in New Rochelle, New York, I had a big one in my neighborhood that used to fuck up trash cans. He was gigantic. I mean, it was like a dog. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how big he was. And I got a blowgun just so I could try to kill him. But I was terrified. I opened the door. I had a small little yard. And I would open the door, and he would literally be fucking 10 feet from me. And I'd panic and slam the door. I'm like, get out of here, bitch.
My old dog, Cabo, once I always let him out the backyard and just to go to the bathroom. And I let him out, and instead I hear him going, I'm like, oh, what's going on? So I go outside, and there's two skunks. Like cornered in my little backyard, and the dog's about to attack him. And I'm just thinking, I don't want to get sprayed. I don't want the dog to get sprayed. You know,
it takes forever to clean that shit off him. My dog got sprayed when I was a little kid.
Ugh.
It's the worst. Yeah. It takes forever. You use tomato juice. Apparently, there's an enzyme in tomatoes that helps break it down, but not much.
Tomato and
doesn't work that good. You got to keep doing it over and over and over again. That dog stunk for weeks.
Have you ever heard the Billy Burr bit about raccoons?
What is the
raccoon and the little hand stealing the cat, the YouTube video? It's the hardest I've ever laughed at a joke in my life.
I don't think I must have.
I saw him at the Improv one night. It was recently, so it's probably like in his new set. But it's Billy show. You know how angry Billy gets?
Right, right.
He's so angry watching this YouTube video where a raccoon keeps stealing like cat food. Like it comes over and keeps stealing the food from the cat or from the dog or something. And he keeps going, those little fucking raccoon hands. And tears were coming out of my eyes. I was laughing. I've never laughed that hard at a comic's bit.
I'll check it out.
Because he's so angry about the little hands. And he's like, that's in the so fucking funny. Little mask on this.
It's pretty crazy that all dogs came from wolves.
Yeah.
You know, when they figured out the genetic lineage of dogs, they expected to be a bunch of wild canids in there, a bunch of different kinds of canines. Nope. Wolves. Hmm. All originally was a wolf.
Well, what about a dingo?
It's a different kind of dog.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's a canid, a wild dog.
Okay.
You know, like there's specific ones. Like,
but
the
dingo
know.
Doesn't come from a wolf, does it?
I don't know. It's a good question.
It's an Australian.
Dingo's some baby.
Yeah. Do dingoes eat babies? You're from Australia.
My dog looks like a dingo.
Do kangaroos kill people? That was a recent thing of discussion.
One time I got out of a car. And I thought it was a fucking, like we were driving through this like neighborhood. I don't know why we're in this neighborhood.
A simple yes or no would be fine.
I don't know, but I've heard stories that yes.
Because when we went to the zoo in Australia, they told us the big ones, there's big kangaroos. I forget which kinds are the big ones. What are they, the red ones or the gray ones?
I don't know.
The big ones kill people. They have a bunch of times. They said you have to be very careful if you approach them in the wild.
This thing I read the other day, it said like 100 people die a year from it. And then this other website is like, there's been a few known attacks in the history of, you know.
There was one woman recently, her dogs were killed. The most recent attack that I could find online, this kangaroo drowned her dogs.
Right.
That's pretty gangster. Kangaroos drown your dog.
I saw the biggest fucking kangaroo, and I thought it was a statue in these people's yard. And I was like, what the fuck? Who has this giant kangaroo statue? I mean, like 10 foot tall. This
what?
Thing looked like. It was, no. What's
they
your
get
ceiling?
To be like 7
what's
feet
your
tall.
Ceiling?
Though.
Yeah, as tall as your ceiling.
And what? I went, come
and,
on.
And I swear to God, and I got out of the car. I was
dude, this is like a 10 foot ceiling. I was right? How many feet?
I was
like 10 feet.
I was with two other comics, and I see this thing over by these garbage cans. I'm like, holy shit, look at this fucking thing. And I start walking towards it, and this comic named Pommy Johnson goes, get the fuck back in the car, mate. Fucking get in the fucking car. And I'm like, what? And I'm walking towards it, and all of a sudden I see it move. And he's like, it'll fucking disembowel you, mate. It'll fucking go.
Wow.
And that's what they claim. I think it's like an urban myth that they just fucking rip your stomach open.
No, no, it's not an urban myth. People definitely have been attacked in that manner.
This thing,
I thought they just got punched a lot.
The red kangaroo is the big one. I'm just trying to find out how
that would fucking freak me out if I saw a kangaroo that big.
Yeah, no shit. I don't think they're that big, though. I think you were freaking out.
If they
out.
Were that big, I'd love to try to like ride around in them.
Your ceiling, I didn't think it was 10. I thought it was about 7. I'd say 7 feet tall, this fucking thing.
Yeah, that's what they told us when we went to the zoo in Australia.
It was fucking terrifying.
Whoa, okay, here we go. They can go to 8 feet tall and weigh 200 pounds. Wow. Holy shit. Wow.
Have you ever seen those videos of
8 feet fucking tall?
Yeah, terrifying.
That's insane.
I've seen herds of them.
That is amazing.
You ever see those videos of the kangaroos fighting on like the golf courses in Australia?
Yeah, that's where you see them all the time, golf courses.
It's not the red kangaroo. The gray kangaroo is the big one, right? Isn't that the big one?
I don't know. Did you ever see guys fight them?
The Eastern Grey.
The boxing glove.
Jesus Christ. No, the red kangaroo does grow to 9 feet fucking tall. Holy shit, dude. It doesn't weigh as much as the gray, but the red grows to 9 fucking feet tall.
It was
tall.
The scariest thing because I got
whoa.
I got from here to the curtain. I was 10 feet away from it.
Fuck that.
And I was walking to it because I swear to God, it looked like a statue. And all of a sudden it like moved its hand and I went, oh my God, that's fucking alive. And
holy shit.
That's crazy.
That is so big.
Yeah, and this comic would just start yelling out, get the fuck in the car.
Whoa, man. Wow. Yeah, that's a scary thing. And they apparently, well, people are cunty to them, I'm sure. That's probably why
they're
so
people hate
aggressive.
Them. They think they're rodents.
Yeah. Well, they kind of are.
Yeah, I mean, they...
Right?
I think they're kind of cool. I think they're kind of cool, though.
Squirrels must feel so fortunate that they're not rats. All they need is just that fluffy tail and everything's groovy and no plague. Yeah. You know, just eat nuts. You don't have to eat garbage. Okay, cool.
Have you seen the viral video yet of the rat that goes up the guy's face?
What? Oh, yes, on the subway?
I haven't seen it yet. Everybody's been telling me
about
it.
New York City rats are fucking terrifying. I remember when I lived in New York, I think I've told this story, but I'll tell it again for this. I was at a gas station once, and I went to use a cell phone, a payphone. This is how old this story is. You know, I didn't have a cell phone. So I step away from my car while my car is pumping gas, and I go to the payphone, and I'm on the payphone. And while I'm on the payphone, I'm watching rats, big ones, like cats, jump in the wheel housing of my car, climb on the tires, climb down. And
in
I am
your car?
Fucking, yes. I'm fucking 15 feet away. I stepped over to use the payphone. And as I'm standing there on the phone, I'm watching these rats. And they keep going down this opening in the manhole. There must have been thousands of them down there. The way they were coming up so quickly and in such like rapid succession, one after the other, wow, and then down one after the other one. I'm like, there's just a train of them down there.
It's like
I would have called 911 and reported my car stolen.
Oh, it's so scary, dude. There's more rats than people in New York City.
Yeah, like four. I think it's 4 rats for every person.
Oh my God.
I was walking down McDougal Street one time home from the cellar one night. And I'm just walking through, and you know, people put their garbage out in the street for the garbage man to pick them up. I'm going between garbage and a building, and all of a sudden, a rat just runs out from the garbage and uses my foot as like a hurdle. Its little feet touched my foot, and it was the most I've ever been like a woman in my life. I started like jumping up and down, like screaming, because it's like that fucking like adrenaline rush goes, and you can't fight, you're just like, what the fuck? Fuck!
Imagine if a rat was as big as you. We're such pussies. We're such pussies compared to animals. You know? We're so soft and mushy and fleshy.
I think it's the filth, though, of the rat.
The filth. They're furious. Those are wild
that
motherfuckers.
That doesn't scare me as much as the filth of them. You feel like they carry hepatitis fucking AIDS and everything.
The Black Plague. Isn't that connected to rats? Isn't that all about rats?
Not
a bunch of plagues have been about rats. Yeah, I mean, they're horrible carriers of diseases.
But who was it? Jim Norton and I think it was Jim Norton and Rich Voss used to go to this one park in New York and sit there and watch the rats, and they said you'd see like thousands of these rats.
Dude, there's so many of them in Manhattan. Manhattan is so crazy with rats. I was at a pool hall once in New Jersey, and this is the scariest rat I ever saw. I was with my friend John. We were doing a gig, and we stopped home from the gig to play some pool. We stopped at this pool hall. I get out of the car, and as I'm walking towards the door, there's a dumpster like outside, and as I pass by the dumpster, there's the biggest rat I've ever seen in my life. I mean, it is like a raccoon. It was gigantic. No bullshit. I'm not bullshitting. It was 2.5, maybe 3 feet long in the body. It was enormous. And it had these huge fucking nasty yellow teeth. And I don't know if it was sick or if it was dying. I mean, it might have been old age because it was so big. It might have been the end of the line for this fucking thing. But it was up on its back legs and it was going like this to me. And I was thinking, do I kick this thing? Do I get a rock? What the fuck? I was just such a little girly man. I'll never forget the noise.
Well, you got to think, with all the poison they lay down, like you'll see the signs in the subway saying, you know, careful, there's like poison everywhere. Rat poison. They've got to be adapting and mutating.
Right.
And we're making some fucking scary rat that is just.
Of course, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens with bacteria, right? That's what we're at MRSA. It's, you know, that staph infection that people get that's antibiotic resistant. That's what it is. It's from fucking.
Is that like the super bug?
Yeah. Well, the MRSA is the super staph. It's that it's micro. It's I don't know what it actually stands for, but it's something resistant staph. So it's antibiotic resistant. So when people get it, it's like really, really dangerous. And it's really just created by human beings, by, you know, us fighting off different versions till the only ones to survive were super fucking strong.
That's why I just read the other day that 80% of all the antibiotics in America are given to animals. Like, they pump them so full of antibiotics. And the same bacteria that we used antibiotics to fight off, so do animals. So all the antibiotics they're taking is causing the bacteria to mutate, which is making us immune to these antibiotics too.
Like, is that true? Because I was did a thing about I talked about Food Inc.
You know, I saw the movie.
And I got contacted, and this is one of the coolest fucking things about this podcast. I got contacted by a bunch of scientists.
Fuck.
Food scientists. You know, people who are, you know, involved in, you know, these farms, and one guy who worked for a poultry company, and he was talking to me about it. Let me find it here.
That shows the difference between your listeners and ours. You have all these like intelligent people that are really interested. We get guys who are like, you guys are fat cunts.
Well, I get those too.
Watch Corn too, by the way, if you ever get the chance to watch the documentary Corn.
Is that about Monsanto?
That's where they even go into more detail about having holes on the side of the cows.
It's creepy in Food Inc. There's a hole in the side of the cow. Well, it's according to this guy. First of all, one he wanted, and his name is Jacob Kim. So thank you, Jacob. And one of the things that he explained to me is that chickens are not on steroids. And then what it is just genetic selection. And then they've naturally selected birds with bigger and bigger breasts to the point where they're freaks. So they wouldn't have survived if they were a real animal, but, you know, because we grow them just for their tits. So, and he also said that what they're supposed to do is they're supposed to cycle the antibiotics. So when a bird is sick, say like they have a cycle, like there's 49 days, he says, to grow a bird. So in business terms, the farmer sees profits go down as the flock stays longer than that. So in the instance that a 30-day-old flock gets sick, well, they're supposed to wait 21 days before they kill them. So when they get sick, they're going to lose like 10 or 11 days of profit. So if they do something like that and lose these days of profit, you know, it's like a problem with them. So some unscrupulous companies don't follow that. And then they send out the bird, you know, like 15 days later, and the bird's still pumped up with antibiotics. It hasn't processed through the system.
So you're saying it's cycled out.
I can't believe it. I knew I fucking had one thing that I didn't do right.
Cool.
Let me shut it off. Thanks, AT&T, you fucking cunts. My new phone number, you fuckheads, for giving out it all to 1-800-FAGGOTS. Oops, I said it. Shit.
Unretired.
You gotta stay away from that word.
Yeah, he retired it, but it's been feeding. It's been growing in him lately.
Yeah, I find it a funny word.
Yeah. I'm never going to retire a word. Come on.
I always said, like, when they tried to retire the N-word, I go, what are they going to do? Put it on a banner and raise it into the rafters at, like, the Apollo Theater, like a number? Like, it's retired.
You know, and if
I apologize for saying that word.
If some gay guy gets mad at me, and I'll just flirt with him until he calms down.
You just blow him until he goes to sleep.
Don't be mad.
Yeah, I do a bit right now where I say it. I go, the reason that like gay men are more sexually promiscuous than men and women is because they've got time and energy from not fighting all the time. Because a gay fight, you know, it's just like, hey, those shoes don't match right. your belt. And he's like, really? Let's fuck. You know, like that's.
Please,
and,
gay guys beat the shit out of each other.
And that's the other thing. Gay guys can beat the other shit out of each other. And the cops show up. They're like, what happened? He punched me. Well, hit him back, faggot.
That's funny. So anyway, back to this guy. So what the guy was explaining to me. So no steroids for chickens. That's not true. But it is true for cows. So cows are jacked. Cows are totally jacked up on hormones.
But no hormones at all, or no hormone or no steroids on chickens. Because I eat all grass fed stuff. Yes. I order all my meat from U.S. Wellness Meats.
Dirty hippie.
Yeah, no,
it's good. Grass fed beef tastes really good.
I fucking had a strip last night and pork chops, grass fed pork chops.
Yeah,
I ordered.
We need pop shields, by the way, because pork chops makes a big terrible noise in people's ears.
I
ordered those.
Oh, cool.
I'm soon.
But I eat the paleo diet. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I eat that diet and I'm into all the grass-fed shit. And my chicken breasts that I get are grass-fed and they're fucking massive.
Really?
And I'm like, this is weird. I heard the whole thing was when you buy organic and grass-fed that you're just not getting they're bigger.
It's the chemicals possible? In the grass.
Yeah. I'm a little
how's that possible?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any steroids. Sense.
Yeah. What's going on in that grass?
Oh. Hey, so what did you think about that movie?
Enter the Void. I saw it last night. I shut it off after the car accident when the parents were killed in the car accident. Mm-hmm. I'm like, first of all, you showed me a girl who's a prostitute and a stripper, mm-hmm. okay? And then you showed her happy family. Mm-hmm. Fuck you, okay? That's more science fiction than the DMT shit because that's just shitty writing to me. You're showing me this girl who loves her brother and how much do you love me? I love you so much. You're just jerking with my emotions, man. This isn't good story writing. This is nonsense. What I liked about the movie was the first person perspective. It was like I was in a video game.
Like
that was cool as fuck.
The blinking of the eye. You remember, like, you could actually see it where the character blinks.
Yeah.
They would have it, like, randomly every 5-10 seconds.
Yeah.
And then when he goes into the DMT trip, did you think that was pretty realistic?
No.
I thought that was so amazing.
It was interesting. Yeah, but it wasn't realistic.
Yeah.
First of all, you couldn't explain what the DMT trip looks to a person. You couldn't recreate it with like CGI because what it is isn't possible. What you'll see, it doesn't make any sense what I'm saying.
Right.
But when you have a DMT trip, you're not seeing anything that can be recreated. It's impossible to recreate. It's like what I'm watching there was just some swirly cool shit and like really interesting. But when you see it, when you see a DMT trip, it's just, first of all, it's a million things at the same time. It's a bunch of different things. It's no matter how you, depending how you look at it, it's a different thing.
I really liked how there was so much detail too, because I've noticed this on past hallucinate trips before, like little things. So like after he was tripping, like he shut this door and the door kind of had like a red pulse when he shut it and stuff like that. Now, what did you think about even at the very beginning where you were hypnotized in a seizure where it's just flashing all those logos?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Like that happens throughout the movie. And some points you're just like, all right, they're brainwashing me right now. This is like from the government or Google.
Yeah,
hey, DMT.
That kind of shit though. I'm starting to wonder about that with every. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I am paranoid. So
are you really?
I'm completely paranoid, and or I can get there, and I've got to like close the neural pathways, you know, and just fucking like try to bring myself back from it, because I can go totally into that where I'll start thinking like anything, like a fucking sitcom, you know, like.
Well, you had a real freak out recently. We talked about this on the Green Room. Where you got super paranoid from weed.
Yeah, and I've had it happen. It was the second time it happened. The first time I ate a pot cookie in Australia. The second time I just smoked.
But you said something really interesting to me. You know, you said, I can't smoke pot. I said, yes, you can. You said, I have to go to therapy first.
Yeah.
Like, what do you have to go to therapy about?
Breathing exercises?
I don't fucking know, but it just put me into panic attacks. And I thought it was just the weed. The first time it happened.
Haven't we smoked weed before? Didn't we smoke weed in Florida?
You know, it's another funny story.
Yeah,
you know, it's a funny story. One time I was at a medicinal marijuana benefit that you were like playing. You were like doing a show at the Comedy Store for it. And Brian Callen and I came over. And some girl was with you, like that was in charge of it or something. And she goes, she had these muffins. And I had no idea that I didn't know that you were a big pothead. I didn't know that what it was. And I was starving, and she goes, do you want a muffin? And I'm like, yeah, I'll have a muffin. So I ate the muffin, And I'm like, these are really good. And she's like, yeah. And then I, Callan goes, what's the show? And you go, oh, it's a benefit for medicinal marijuana. And I go, it click. I went, did I just fucking eat a pot muffin? And she goes,
oh, dude, I remember
this. She goes, yeah. And I went like this. I go, I got to get home right now. And I drove home as fast as I could because I knew it would take, you know, like 20 minutes for it to kick in. And I just didn't want to be out with it going on and just be. And I was like, fuck, I got it. Because I had eaten pot cookies before. And I was like, I got to get the fuck home.
So what happened?
So I drove home as fast as I could. I get home and it kicks in. And I just had the fucking greatest experience all alone. And I'm having like a wonderful night. And I called a girl. And I go, can you go to 7-Eleven for me? I need this. And I just was laughing. And she's like, you're high. I'm like, yeah. But the first time I did it was in Australia. And I had such a great time. I had to do a show 3 nights in a row. By the third night, the same exact audience.
Oh, my God.
Every night.
That's ridiculous.
So by the third show, I'm out of shit. You know, I'm down to my worst stuff. And I'm like, so right before I went on stage, I ate a pot cookie. Thinking, this will be.
Oh, no.
I did like an hour and 45 minutes. And they're like, it was fucking brilliant. And wow. I'm like, what did I talk about? They're like, you talked about the Mach 3 Razor for an hour. And I'm like, really? And they're like, we don't even have it here.
That's hilarious.
Too bad you didn't record your set.
Yeah.
That would have been great. I've had two freakouts where one I went to the hospital. And the
was it
one
pot related?
Pot related. And one's where the ambulance came to my house. And But now I don't get that anymore. I don't get that anxiety or anything like that unless I eat it. And then when I eat it, it's not good.
Well, so. Also, I mean, depends on what's going on in your life at the time.
You think?
You know?
Well,
yes.
I should be getting paranoid. I should be dead right now then.
Why?
Because I smoke pot every day and my life's crazy, you know?
Your life's crazy?
Yeah. Well, you know, just all the shit lately. If that's what you're saying.
I don't think your life's crazy, man. I think your life is saner now than it was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember I don't want to get into personal details, right. But you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
The problem is, all right, and here's the number one problem with eating it, is that nobody knows what the fuck it does to you. You know, nobody tells you. They just sell these things at the pot stores. Oh, is that a pot brownie? Oh, I'll try eating it. Not knowing that it's way more powerful. Yeah. Way, way more powerful. And it lasts forever. I ate a pot brownie once, and I swear to God, it lasted 12 hours.
Yeah, this first one lasted about 12.
Fucking amazing.
And they told me, it was funny, I was having a great time. I was in Adelaide, Australia. I'd been drinking all day. And then I ate half a cookie, and they said, just eat half. Nothing happened. I go, I'm going to have the other half. And they were like, all right. I did the other half. Having a great time, and all of a sudden, I turned around. I got up to go to the kitchen. I turned around and looked at these girls, and I go, make it stop. Whatever we have to do to stop this,
To stop your trip?
Yeah, I was like, is there any way to, like, abort right now? And they're like, all right, calm down. And I'm like, no, we need to fucking stop this. And they're like,
why are you being such a bitch?
I don't know, but what started happening, it was like...
Around a bunch of girls, man? Why don't you pull it together?
Hey, remember when I tripped out at Fear Factor, I had to sit with all those girl interns in their car, and
I'm just
like...
You kept it together, though. You didn't yell at anybody to make it stop.
Yeah. I thought my eyeballs were
popping. I
checked
him when he first came here from Ohio. He had nothing. He had no resistance. He was used to this Ohio weed, which might as well have been...
It's Mexican brick weed.
Might as well have been smoking talcum powder, which is nonsense. That's a terrible example.
Gold Bond.
And I gave him a pot lollipop. These fucking Beyond Bomb, before Beyond Bomb went to jail. they were operating a multi-million-dollar operation out of Oakland, and the DEA raided him during the Bush administration.
And we had two. We had one on the way there, and then like a half hour later, you're like, you feel anything? I'm like, no, not really. And then so we took another one, because I think you were new to the lollipops too at the time.
Fuck.
We didn't really know like the length of how much long
this
the
is
wait
giving
and
me
stuff.
A panic attack right now.
And yeah. I'm sitting in, he drops me and goes, oh, hang out here in this trailer. It was like the trailer with all the managers and directors,
producers
and stuff like that. And I'm just sitting in the back not knowing anybody, and it hits me.
They were all super friendly.
Oh, they're totally cool. But I mean, my heart started pounding. I started freaking out. I go and sit on the curb, and then in between breaks, you come out and you're like, how you doing? And I'm like, dude, I'm so fucking stoned. I'm having a panic attack. And you're like, dude, I still have a mic on. Everyone can. And so now everybody everybody in the trailer now hears me. And so then he like dropped me off in these interns' car and just sat there and talked about fucking Sex in the City or something.
I think I told you this. I know this. These little dudes that I used to kind of. It was a girl that I was friends with, her little brothers, and they were big potheads in high school. And we used to hang around when we were in college at their house. And they'd always, they were up to no, like they'd grow it in their backyard. They tried everything. So they were making pot cookies one night, and they make them and they leave them out. They're kind of a wealthy family. They have like a maid and everything. They leave the pot cookies out because the parents are always out of town. The maid puts them in baggies and puts them in the cookie canister. Dad comes home, grabs two full cookies and eats them, rush to the hospital thinking he's having a heart attack.
Wow. Oh, that's hilarious.
And I say to the kid, like, they're telling me the story. I'm like, so did you tell him? They're like, fuck no.
Wow.
That's hilarious. So did he ever figure out that he was medicated?
I don't think he did. Like, the whole family.
Just thought he had a panic attack?
Yeah.
You know, one kid went to jail because they dosed their teacher up in school. They gave the teacher pot cookies.
I remember in high school, we used to always try to sneak in laxatives into our teachers' coffees and stuff. And I look back and I'm like, that's fucking rude. Because, I mean, I remember getting like milk and dangerous and just pouring like the whole thing.
That's dangerous, too.
That's evil. I heard about a fraternity once, you know, all these dumb fraternity pranks. Forget where it was, this college, like George Mason, when I was doing a show there, they go, oh yeah, we got this fraternity that at the end of Hell Week, they feed them spaghetti. They give them this big spaghetti dinner that the like little sisters make for them. And then they feed them like chocolate pudding, but it's full of X-lax. And then they make them climb a tree, and they've got to spend the night in a tree. Like the top guy gets to go to the top of the tree and all the way down. So like if you're an asshole, you're down at the bottom.
So they're shitting on each
other? They're just all shitting on each other. Like a tree of shit.
Fraternity things are so disgusting. Yeah. They're just preparing you for just to be fucked with to be in some cunty group where you get to fuck with new people. Just taking advantage of the people that have the least amount of power and the people that want the most from you.
The only good thing about fraternities was going to their parties and like fucking those their sorority girls.
I did stand up at a fraternity once. I'm pretty sure. I know I was supposed to. I did a lot of college gigs in like weird spots, like cafeterias and shit, and rec rooms.
Yeah.
And I did one in a cafeteria where I had to stand on actual cafeteria tables. It was like that was the stage. It was a table. It stood on a cafeteria table. But one fraternity stunt that I heard that was the craziest was they made this guy drink water and he died from water.
Oh yeah, you can.
Drank too much water.
What's that called? Hypnotremia or
something? Yeah,
it's
pretty much you're drowning yourself.
Yeah,
it's not nuts though, but
you piss out all your salt and then you dehydrate. Like you weirdly,
it almost happens with this new Starbucks size. Jesus Christ, I've been drinking this iced tea forever and I'm still only like 25%.
We are such gluttons. Hold that up to the camera.
Yeah.
It's for folks that don't see it at home. This is the new Starbucks. 32 ounce, and this is just an iced coffee or an iced tea rather.
Yeah, here's the old size, and here's the other size, and it's thicker too or bigger.
It's not only taller, but
it's wider. Yeah,
I got that Hypnotremia 32
ounces,
shit,
right?
In a marathon, I ran a marathon.
You drank too much water.
I panicked. Like, you just shouldn't change your fucking habits. But everybody goes, oh, you know, make sure you hydrate. So I drank like fucking like 10 bottles of water before the race. Like,
oh wow.
And I knew I started pissing like so much that I went, fuck, I'm gonna piss all my salt out. So I went up to
thought about that ever a day in my life.
I went up to a coffee table and they have coffee, and I go to this woman, I go, do you have salt packets? I need fucking salt. I just wanted to down some salt.
Right.
Wow.
And this big fat black woman goes, who puts salt in their coffee? And I'm like, just give me fucking salt. And I knew it was going to fucking happen. And sure enough, I hit like the 16-mile mark. And I hit a wall I'd never hit in my life because I was just nothing left in me.
I've never heard anybody doing that
before. I've never even thought about salt.
I know a woman died in, I think it was Sacramento, I want to say. There was a radio stunt that they did where she had to drink a lot of water.
Yeah, that was like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Yeah, and it was like we were on the crosstown radio station. You know, we were on like one of their competitor stations, and they were telling us a story how fucked up it was. You know, that's
yeah, I remember
sad
that
shit, man.
Death by
some
water.
Woman who was trying to win like an Xbox for her kids
it
or something
wasn't
crazy.
In San Francisco?
A Wii.
I think it was
some Northern California, yeah. Sacramento. I thought it was, might be San Jose, but Northern California, whatever it is. But it's just like, fuck, man, drinking water. We're so bitchy. We're so fragile. Is there a dog out there that could die because he drinks too much water? No. We suck. We're such pussies.
Yeah, but that's an anomaly. That's like then you see guys that I know a dude who this fucking crazy dude that I know from New Jersey who drank bleach and he's alive.
What?
Oh, he's the dumbest. This guy went to Penn State and my friends all know him and they all talked about him. I finally got to meet him and he's just a fucking maniac. He sells Mack trucks now. I think that's what he does for a living.
Wow.
And they knew him from this fraternity. They're like, this dude fell off the roof 4 times.
Everybody knows a guy like that.
And right? I'm like, why would you keep climbing up there? And they're like, they would put signs, don't let him on the roof. Don't. He would still go up there and fall off. So they tell me he chugged bleach. And I'm like, I don't, or did a shot of it or something. Oh, and I go, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. So I meet him one night, or I see him, and I go, hey, dude. I think his name's Regan or something. I go, is it true you drank bleach? And he's like, yeah. And I go, why? And he goes, because it's said on the bottle, if you drink this, you will die. Am I dead? No. And that was like his whole point. Like,
wow. He's a fucking philosopher.
I know homeless people used to drink rubbing alcohol when they couldn't get real alcohol or something like that.
Do you remember Michael Dukakis?
Yeah.
Michael Dukakis, when he ran for president, he was running for president, and his wife, Kitty Dukakis, was such an alcoholic that she began drinking shaving cream and wow. shit like that. Yeah. She was drinking like nutty shit, and she got rushed to the hospital. I believe it was shaving cream. Aftershave, something nutty.
Do you work the Stress Factory in New Jersey?
I have.
Vinnie Brand told me a story. I forget the comic. I think he was one of those like famous prop comics, but in his day was like a really bad alcoholic. And I'm like, I could be wrong with who the comic is, but
Lenny Schultz, Crazy Lenny.
I don't think it was Lenny, because I think the guy's Lenny's not dead, is he?
I don't know.
Whoever it is, I think is dead now. But
Lenny was really old.
He went in fucking Vinny's office and drank cologne.
What?
Yeah. Like he came out and Vinny smelled his breath and was like,
"What the fuck?
Like
is
he was
wrong
that much of an alcoholic?"
Like chicks, have you ever heard of like when girls fall asleep with hair dryers in their beds? That's like an actual, you know, a lot of girls do that. To keep warm or something like that, or the sound of it. And they, have you ever heard of that before? They just full blast hair dryer and they sleep
in their bed.
In their bed. And what? It's actually a condition.
What?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
People are so nuts, man. This Kitty Dukakis thing, it was rubbing alcohol. That's what she drank. You know,
I thought she died.
I guess she was rushed to the hospital. I mean, I guess you can die. But how crazy is that? This guy was running for president. It just goes to show you how much your world is falling apart when you're running for president. You know, I mean, how much effort do you have to put into it? It's the reason why these guys go gray like a year after they get into office. You know, the amount of stress and I mean, he wasn't paying attention to his wife at all. Don't you think you'd know if your wife was ready to drink rubbing alcohol?
I just,
like, baby, how you feeling? Oh, I'm thinking about drinking some fucking cologne.
What?
Let's talk. Hold on. Listen, I can't talk. I got to run for president. But don't drink cologne. I'll be back in 20 days. Baby, I'm thinking about drinking some rum cologne.
Don't drink my perfume.
Yeah, she was apparently she was taking antidepressants or something too. She'd been taking an antidepressant prescription. This is like antidepressants back in the fucking 80s. You know what were they?
I'm amazed.
Ground up leeches. What did they serve you in 1989 for antidepressants?
Cocaine. Coca-Cola.
What kind of antidepressants do they have? They didn't have the good shit.
Just drink a Coke.
Thorazine. No, that was for, isn't that lithium. For schizophrenia or something?
I don't know. Prozac, right? Wasn't Prozac one of the early ones?
I don't know.
Dude, I know so many fucking parents that dope up their kids. I know two parents where their kids are just wild, they're crazy, and the parents don't pay much attention to the kids, so the kids are on drugs.
They put
the kids on some
medication.
People
do that with dogs. Yeah. People give dogs antidepressants and fucking anxiety drugs. And
my old neighbor, she used to live down the street from me, and, you know, I didn't know her that much, but you just see, hi, how you doing? What's going on? And her kid was, you know, always running around and, you know, playing fucking dragons and swords like kids do. You know, I got to get him on something. There's something wrong with him. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with your kid. It's a kid. When kids are fucking 4 and you work all day and you come home, they're wired to the gills, okay? No one's watching what they're eating. They're eating candy all day, and they want to go crazy and go nutty. You're just old. You forgot what it's like to be a 5-year-old. This is how 5-year-olds are. They're fucking crazy. 5-year-old boys are crazy. And she had him doped up. And then this other lady I know, same fucking thing. Her kid was wild. He was running around, crashing cars into everything. She's like, there's something wrong with him. I got to take him to the doctor. I'm like, there's nothing wrong with your fucking kid.
He's a fucking kid.
So she's got him doped up too. You know, it's like,
Jeffrey said,
amazing that that's even an option.
Jim Jeffries said his mom used to wake him up every morning with a glass of orange juice and Ritalin. And she would just open up like... He said he didn't even know what it was. She'd just be like, open up and just pop him in his mouth him drink it down.
Well, you know, when you develop a kid incorrect, I mean, some people are just mentally imbalanced. That is a fact. There's some people, their hormone levels or their chemical levels of their brain are just fucked up, and they do need some help. But there's other people that somebody raised them shitty. He just did a terrible job, barely fucking paid attention to them, and the kid developed all this nutty behavior. And getting it out of someone, it's way harder to get something out of someone once it's in there. Once they've already developed some wacky patterns of behavior and they have like a certain associations, very difficult to get that to change. But if you could just, you know, it's way easier to raise them correctly from the beginning. To try to turn someone around once they're fucked up, it's like, how many people that you know that are a mess, that have fucked up lives, ever pull it together? Ever. You know, ever. So few. But so few people ever quit anything.
I know a chick who used to prostitute herself.
Oh.
And she was like the nicest girl in the world. I knew two girls that kind of like went to prostitution. And they, you wouldn't think either of these girls, but she was doing like Craigslist hooking and shit. And she, you know, had like the molestation thing and all that fucked up stuff. And she went to therapy. And I said, why don't you tell, you know, what's your therapist say about it? And she's like, I don't tell him. I'm like, well, you need to tell your therapist that you were molested and all this stuff and work on that shit. And she did eventually. And she's like married. And I think she's a kid. And her life is good. She really is a product of like it actually. Wow. She cleaned up that problem.
People can do it, man. You can change. It's just you got to be fucking goddamn committed to staying on that track. You almost have to become addicted to changing.
Yeah.
You know, you have to like get so, and it has to get ingrained in you so deeply after so long a time that it actually becomes your new way of thinking and your new behavior. I mean, if you just go back and look at yourself, I mean, if I had to be myself at 21, I mean, I couldn't imagine if I had my 21-year-old brain today. I would be fucking insane. I'd have nothing. I would light the house on fire. I would fucking drive my cars over cliffs. I mean,
I feel like last night what happened in my house, I had my 21-year-old brain.
Yeah, you guys had some nutty ass podcast on.
Oh, fuck.
What was I going
to
ask you?
I'm afraid to go to my house. It's
so,
so
you never
destroyed.
Finished what happened to you in the most recent pot thing where you okay, sent so, me a so message.
Yeah. I was in New Zealand and I had smoked a few times. Arch Barker and I are really good friends. And when we're in Australia, we go to his house and we just...
And he's another guy that's huge in Australia.
Massive.
He's like, in Australia, he's like Chris Rock is in America,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Wow.
Like
Dane Cook.
Yeah, that massive. Like
crazy.
Sells every ticket he puts out.
I mean, I've heard of him in America.
He's
but,
funny as fuck.
But it's crazy that a guy catches
Arjun
on
Poopy.
Like that.
Yeah, I love Arjun
He's
Poopy.
Fucking hilarious. And and he was doing well in America. He's on Flight of the Conchords. You know, he's got a career here.
Yeah, it's not that he's doing bad, but he's
just
a superstar over there.
He's a superstar there, and he loves it, and it's a great place.
So he splits his time there?
No, he's there now permanently.
Permanently?
Yeah.
It's so crazy he said, fuck it.
He bought this great house up in the middle of, like, it's out there. And he's got a farm. And he just loves it.
Now you're huge in Australia too, but you want to be over here more.
Yeah, I'd much rather be here.
Why is that?
Just, you know, I've got family here and stuff, and getting back, the 15-hour flight's not easy.
It's brutal.
It is brutal.
They fucking crush you. They crush your spirit. Those
three
flights.
Weeks, you.
I fly.
Don't you have to?
Yeah, go there in 3 weeks.
I'm going too.
Are you
going
to be in town that week?
I leave Sydney like the day you show up.
Oh, really? Shit, dude. Could have hooked you up with some UFC tickets.
What day is your?
I got two shows because the first show sold out.
Are you at the Enmore again?
No, I couldn't get in there. There was a band. Because the UFC, what happens is the UFC books their stuff kind of like late in comparison to like stand up and concerts. Like if you go to a concert venue, most concert venues are booked 6 months to a year out. So. For UFC, it's not that far out. Like we haven't announced shit. We got some shit announced right now that's in April, but there's still some stuff in March that's up in the air, and the May stuff's up in the air, and the June stuff is up in the air. Some of them get confirmed, and some of them are still up in the air. And the problem is, sometimes I don't find out until like maybe the latest, the earliest is 3 months out.
Right.
And 3 months out, it's tough to get a gig because they're all the venues are booked on Friday and Saturday nights. So it's Saturday night. I'm at Rudy Hill. Wherever that is.
I know
Rudy,
that is.
Rudy Hill RSL.
Yeah, I know it. It's
supposed to be in a funky neighborhood.
I think you must be. Is A-List promoting?
The same people that promoted the last time.
Yeah, those are my guys.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah. Same guys.
Yeah,
cool guys.
You'll pack that place.
Yeah, it's the first one's already sold out, and the second one. And by the way, if you want to go to Mandalay Bay this weekend, it's almost sold out. Friday night at the Mandalay Bay Theater. And there's going to be it's going to be Ari Shaffir and Joe Diaz. So it's going to be fucking crazy. It's a big, giant place. But I've been pimping the tickets for a long time, so it's almost sold out. So this is the place I'm doing in Sydney as the RSL club. You ever work at?
Yeah, I think I've been.
Is it good?
Yeah. You're in. It's an RSL. RSL is like their retired service league.
Yeah.
Which means it's like their veterans clubs.
Right.
And so it's like a VFW you're playing.
So but how come people tell me to get the fuck out of the neighborhood?
You think you're like, fuck, I'm playing a VFW, but in that place they'll have a big fucking. It must be pretty big. What's the capacity?
I think it's like 800. It says
yeah.
Capacity.
Yeah. They'll have like this theater within their like. But in every little town, they have these RSLs, and it's where you go to drink cheap before you go out at night.
Right.
And they got poker machines.
Italian club.
Yeah.
But why are they telling me to get out of town?
Because it's probably, they saying it's a shitty neighborhood?
Yeah. They're like, if you're going to party, don't party there. Get the fuck out of there.
Yeah, get back into Sydney.
Why? Is it creepy?
Yeah, it's just a fucking suburb. It's like playing like, you know, like if you were in Clifton.
Where's Clifton?
New Jersey? And you're not. And you
sometimes it's fun being in the suburbs, though. Sometimes it's fun being in those weird fringe places.
Well, they've got, you know, their rednecks are called Bogans.
Bogans?
Bogans.
So they're like Crocodile Dundee? Is that a redneck?
No, they're more like, they're guys that are into like Nitro Circus kind of shit. They'd call them
Nitro
Bogans.
Circus?
Like,
Nitro
Circus?
What does that mean?
Nitro Circus is that MTV show with Travis Pastrana.
I have no idea.
The motorcycle jumping and all that So they're just like fucking, you know, guys that like to have fun in
adventure
the
fucking,
yeah, they're a lot of guys in Australia fucking ride motorcycles and they drive utes, which are like pickup trucks.
Australia's a goddamn manly country.
Yeah. Extremely.
Goddamn manly. What is that about? Is it the prison colony thing?
I think it has a lot to do with that. It
has to. Fucking beautiful place, man. Australia's so gorgeous.
And I surf down there and the surfers there just crush American sir. Like
really
every dude there you think he's a pro. Like
really?
you'll just go to some guy, you do you surf? And he'll be like, yeah, do it a little and you wanna go tomorrow? You'll go the next day and be like, dude, you should be on tour. Like
really
fucking all amazing.
Well, they love the UFC, man. The UFC sells out there in like 15 minutes time.
Really?
Every single time we've been there, we've been there twice, but every single time it breaks records, sells out quicker than anything. It's fucking nutty. And they love George Sotiropoulos. They're one guy. They got one famous Australian guy. He's a fucking
Greek dude.
Yeah, he's a top contender right now in the UFC too. Nicest fucking guy in the world. But he's a perfect Aussie, just a fucking savage.
They have a real fucking like they call them blokes. Like a guy's a bloke, and they're very blokey. And women complain about it. Like in Sydney, I always say that like you can't even talk to a woman in a bar because the guys have fucked them over so badly. You go up to go and be like, "Hi," she'll be like, "Go fuck yourself, cunt." And you're
really?
"Whoa, what did I do?" And it's not what you did. It's what the last 20 guys that dealt with her did. So the girls are on the defensive, because the guys just – it's all about your boys.
But don't they have a different attitude towards sex in Australia? They're much more permissive, much more relaxed.
I would say they're a lot
pretty
more
pretty much fucking everywhere but America. That's one thing you don't realize about America is how – I mean, obviously, the Middle East is worse unless you're a little boy. But in the Middle East, they love to fuck little boys. Yeah. That's an awesome time for them. But as far as like European countries, we are so fucked up in comparison to them. Like our whole repression, all that shit, that doesn't exist over there. They're like in Argentina, South America.
Yeah,
South America.
The commercials.
Yeah, they're super.
Well, I've heard, and I don't know how true this is. I read, or it was in, it was a statistic in Jesus Camp. Did you see that film?
Yes.
It said 2/3 of America's born again Christians.
No.
That's what it said in the beginning of that film.
I don't think that's correct. I think probably 2/3 of the people they talk to
are evangelical Christians.
You know, finding the numbers for 300 million people, that's so problematic.
Yeah.
Not only that, you got to add in Mexicans, you know, because there's a lot of undocumented people in this country, and who knows how many it is. I mean, I've heard millions and millions in California alone, so who knows how many it is nationwide. So knowing how many people are actually Christians and evangelical Christians or people who believe the earth is less than 10,000 years old, you know, it's the numbers are who the fuck knows what they are. I've heard 51% believe the earth is less than 10,000 years old. 51% believe in a biblical version of the Bible.
That's fucked up.
Oh, which, by the way, play that fucking clip.
I was gonna
say. Yeah, God, we have to play this clip. Bill O'Reilly, man. Now, by the way, Bill O'Reilly went to fucking Harvard. All right?
I think he's a troll. I think he's playing a character.
I think you might be right.
I'm almost positive.
I think he's very clever as to like the kind of shit that he supports and the way he supports it is so asinine that it's almost like he's trolling. It's almost like subtle parody.
Yeah, here's why I think that. I used to do sports radio in New York City. I was on WNEW, which is the station Opie and Anthony were on and all that. I was the morning show with this guy named Sid Rosenberg. Sid's a,
sure, I know Sid Rosenberg. Yeah, I do his show in Miami all the time.
Sid's, you know, a sports expert.
Yes.
I knew fucking nothing. It was supposed to be like Love Lines where he was the expert and I was the comedian.
Right.
And Sid wanted me to be an expert in sports, and I don't give a shit about, you know, what the fucking guy's stats
are. So did he ask you to, like, learn the stats?
No, but there was constant conflict between the two of us.
How long did you work there for?
6 months, and I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
So he was telling you, hey, read the sports book, read
the pages. Yeah, and he'd be like, did you watch the game last night? I'm like, no. And he's like, why not? I'm like, I didn't fucking want to, you know? And I'm like, just let me fucking be funny.
Right.
Yeah, I'll be funny. And he's like, but you got to be funny about sports. I'm like, no, I don't. I just have to be funny. So,
man, that always bugs me when I listen to sports radio. And they're like, and how about McHenry with the play in the ninth? Does he think that that's going to get his contract extension?
But it made me fucking like crazy. Because I realized the only way you're going to get ratings and be interesting is I had to basically take on a character.
Right.
And I would sit there and criticize these athletes and these coaches that I didn't even watch the fucking game.
People love to do that, by the way.
I wouldn't even watch the game, and I'd be like, Jim Fossil, he's a fucking pussy. Did you see what he did last
night? Did you say fucking pussy?
No, I wouldn't say that. But I'd be like, I said pussy. I'd go, he's a pussy. He's a pussy. And the next thing you know, all his fans are calling, yeah, I'm going to kick your ass, man. How could you say that? How could I? And I would just try to incite people to create radio.
Right.
So, and I watch fucking Bill O'Reilly, and I'm like, he's doing the same shit. There's no possible way.
He might be. You know, I definitely think he's playing towards his market. He has a market, and he's concocted this gigantic conglomeration of retards and old people that think that he makes sense. But this is one of the most troll-like things that he's ever said. Brian, Okay. Check this out. He's talking about the moon. This is on BillO'Reilly.com. You can find it on YouTube. Backstage conversation. Backstage with Bill O'Reilly.
David, Beverly Hills, Florida. What do you mean when you refer to the tides when you ask about the existence of God? Science explains the tides, the moon's gravity pulls on the ocean. Okay, how'd the moon get there? How'd the moon get there? Look, you pinheads who attacked me for this, you guys are just desperate. How'd the moon get there? How'd the sun get there? How'd it get there? Can you explain that to me? How come we have that and Mars doesn't have it? Venus doesn't have it. How come?
Mars has two moons, by the way. Why not?
How'd it get here? How did that little amoeba get here? Crawl out there. How'd it do it? Come on. You have order in this universe. You have an order in the universe. Tide comes in, tide goes out. Okay, yeah, the moon does it. Fine. How'd the moon get there? Who put it there? Did it just happen? Okay, if we have existence, if we have life on Earth, how come they don't have it on the other planets? Were we just lucky? Some meteor do this? Come on. You know, I see this stuff. It's desperate.
Science is desperate.
Many times. It takes more faith to not believe and to think that this was all luck, that all this human body, the intricacies of it and everything else, all luck, than it does to believe in a deity.
Two things I want you to do right now. Two things I want you to do. One, I want you to go look up Bill O'Reilly scandalous voicemails. Because he left a bunch of voicemails on his assistant's phone about rubbing her down with a loofah sponge and fucking all kinds of creepy shit, and he wound up paying her off.
Don't you think that Bill O'Reilly's the kind of guy that really needs to get really high?
Yeah,
to do mushrooms. And then he might go, holy shit, I take back almost everything I've ever said.
Yeah, for sure he would.
Because it would allow him a different perception that he probably has never entered into, if he does believe that shit.
But I don't know if he does or doesn't. I think he does. And this is why I think he does. I think he does because he's got a tremendous ego. And I think, you know, he's one of those guys that he's saying something all the time. I don't think he would say something all the time unless he believed it. You know, this whole thing, I think he's definitely preaching to the choir. And I definitely think he's, you know, trying to fit a mold and trying to appease his constituents, all the people that listen to his show. But I think it can't be contrary to what he really believes. Because he's got too big of an ego. For him to be on TV talking about it all the time, eventually he'd implode. He wouldn't be able to deal with that. If he really did have an intelligent argument that was contrary to what we were saying, I don't think he would be saying it on the air. I just think his ego's too big. I don't think he's that genius. He's not Andy Kaufman. He's not some brilliant trickster that's fucking fooling the world. I think these guys, they start playing a character, and then they sort of like Dice Clay it. They become the character.
Yeah.
Remember when Dice Clay? Do you know the Dice Clay used to be Andrew Silverstein? By the way, we're going to try to get Dice on the podcast, too. I'm not hating. I love Dice. I had a great talk with Dice the other day. Dice's kid is doing comedy. Dice's kid is 20.
Wow.
And Dice is so proud, and his kid is fucking killing. His kid's like learning. Yeah, and it's fucking great.
What's his name? What's he go by?
What's his name, bro?
Was it Max?
Max? Yeah, I think
it was
Max.
Is it Max Clay?
No, I don't. No, I think does he go by Silverstein?
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've seen his name around.
Dice used to be Andrew Silverstein, and then the Dice Man was like this character that he would do on stage, along with a bunch of other characters. He would do like Stallone, and he would do De Niro. He would do like all these characters, like all these impressions, and the Dice Man was one of his characters. Well, the Dice Man just became his main character. That became his thing he did on stage, and then it became him off stage. You know, and I think that happens to guys like Glenn Beck.
I think what happens is
they start out with this character, and they start out, and then they get all these people. Thank you, Mr. Beck. You make me so happy. And what you said about Jesus is so important to me and my family. And what you say about our troops is so important to me and our family. And this guy is soaking in this love, and he's putting out a book every 3 days, this motherfucker. And all of them are about what's wrong with the left and what's wrong with society and what's wrong with being godless and what's wrong with this. And Sarah Palin's the only hope for our country. And then they start fucking believing it, man, because the human ego, when you're the type of person that's really selling something and pitching something and getting all this adulation for it, if you're an egomaniac, which most people who get into the public eye are, you know, most people that get into a position where they're like a guy like that, where they have an opinion show, where they're on stage every day talking to people and broadcasting to millions, and they get all this love and fan mail, it's very difficult to be objective about that. You know, it's very difficult to, like, you know, have a real honest way of looking at the world. You start looking at it the way they want you to look out, because this is where the love's coming from, you know. And then you start, I mean, Beck turned into a fucking Mormon, okay, as an adult.
Yeah,
as an adult,
creepy.
Who, by the way, is obviously, look, you can say he's crazy, and I do, but that guy's got a high IQ. There's no question in my mind. I guarantee you, if you sat that guy down, he's a 120 plus IQ.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a smart guy. There's no way you can do that in free ball
Mormonism,
because he's fucked up. No, he's not. Look, the intelligence and balance are two totally different things. I've met some brilliant people. I don't want to say his name, a guy who used to design my website. He's fucking brilliant, but completely insane and totally imbalanced. I know a bunch of people like that are really, really brilliant people. But, I mean, mathematically brilliant, you know, structurally brilliant, the way they can, you know, break down complex orders in society, all sorts of, but I mean, their own life is just chaos. And,
so you're saying Beck is brilliant?
Yes, I think he's absolutely brilliant. Brilliant in being a cunt. What he's doing is, I think he's a brilliant guy.
Maybe at manipulation.
Yeah, brilliant at manipulation, brilliant at acting, brilliant at playing a part, brilliant at becoming the perfect version of this guy that all these retards need.
Because I don't think it takes intelligence to be a manipulator.
What he's doing takes intelligence. He's freeballing every day. He's got like a big screen, and he's breaking things down. And some of it makes sense. It's like 20 or 30% of it. I go, God damn it, I agree with Glenn Beck.
Yeah, well.
This is ridiculous. But I think that those guys, when they get to that position where there's an extraordinary amount of success that they achieve in one certain area. I mean, Glenn Beck's house is for sale in Connecticut, and I looked at that shit online. It's fucking giant.
Really?
And it's probably only for sale because he got a bigger one. You know, he got a bigger, crazier one. That guy's selling literally every time I go to the bookstore, there's a new Glenn Beck book. Nobody makes me feel lazier than Glenn Beck, because I've been writing this goddamn book for a year and I can't finish it. And Glenn Beck puts out one every 15 days. It's fucking insane, you know? But these guys, I really truly believe, as a person who's been affected by fame and been affected, like where I've had to look at my own behavior and analyze it, and you know, that's one of the reasons why I really got into psychedelics and the isolation tank, is because I felt like there was an overwhelming influence that fame and the pursuit of fame has on a person, especially in Hollywood, where you're trying to make things happen, where you can lose yourself in this quest, and I think it happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of analyze it in myself, and it took a long time for me to get a hold of it. From like Fear Factor on, there was like a long time in there where I was like, this is a crazy thing here. Like, how do you make sure that what you're doing is really what you want to be doing? How do you know that you know, what you're doing is not what you think people will like to hear from you, or what you think, you know, is going to, you're going to say and do to get more work and to get more people to like you. I mean, I've had conversations with really successful people where they say, you know, I can't do that because I'm this and that, and my image is that and this. And like, okay, you're not even doing you. You're pretending to be something else just so that you can get more of the positive reaction that you've gotten. Well, that permeates into your real life.
But what if that's like I'm the kind of person, I vacillate often. I'll look at one thing and then I'll have a different opinion maybe a year later on how I felt about it. And
that's called being intelligent.
And as a performer, as a comedian, my act's constantly changing. Sometimes I can't do bits that I used to do because I've changed as a person. I don't feel that way and I can't deliver them with truth. And I'm like, that would suck to fucking be locked into
Brian,
a character.
It says we're off the air. It says we're off the air.
Ustream keeps on fucking up, but it's on here. It says we're on air. So it's going off and on. It's choppy for people.
But I can't get on right now.
Yeah. It's on.
You see it?
Yeah, it's on.
You see it online? Yep. Where do you see it online?
We have 13, 17 viewers. It's broadcasting. It's recording.
See if you can see it on a browser.
All right. Anyways, who cares? We're talking about you know.
Well, I accidentally unclicked it and I can't get back to it. Yeah. So sorry. Go ahead.
So people like the ability to like change while you're and to get locked into that character would be terrifying for me. I'm a control freak, and if that's where your income, and I don't have the. You know, I'm lucky enough that I don't have like a wife and kids, but imagine if you got into that where then you've got a house and mortgages and schools and you've bought into this character and all of a sudden you've changed as a character and you're like, fuck, I'm not that guy anymore. I don't feel that way. I've changed my way of thinking, but fuck, I gotta still do that because people do change. People either become more conservative as they get older or, you know, start to realize shit. You know, I've become more liberal as I get older.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think as you become more intelligent, you know, you realize that there's a lot more to things than people like to think. You know, everybody likes to think it's black and white. I have a lot of conservative ideas, a lot of them, about gun control, about taxes, about a lot of different things. But I also have a lot of liberal points of view too, you know, especially when it comes to things like gay marriage, and you know, and that to me is one of the most frustrating things when I see people get upset about gay marriage, you know, like as if it somehow or another fucking affects you of two guys who obviously want to be gay. No one's got a gun to their head. No one's saying if you're not gay, I'm fucking killing your family. You know, no one's doing that. They want to be gay.
I find the people that are afraid of like,
bro, this shit is offline, man.
It's on. Everybody,
but I can't get on.
I know. It's having problems. Ustream has some problems, man. When there's like you're trying to get on, and you have to refresh it a few times. Whatever. It's on though, so don't worry about it.
Wow, that's crazy.
I walked out of the. Actually, it was when I worked with you down in Tampa, or I was doing the early, and then you did like Friday night, and you came in
right.
at the Tampa Improv. I came out like my first night. It was like a Wednesday or something. And there are these guys out in the street holding up signs, and it was like almost like that church from Nebraska or wherever, those crazy fuckers that protest funerals.
It was that kind of thing. God hates fags guy.
And they were holding up signs that God hates fags and blah, blah, blah. And I just walked out, so the audience is out there with me, and I thought, I'm just going to fuck with these people. And I went up to this kid, and I'm like, how old are you? And he's like, I'm 16 years old. I'm like, you're 16, and you're – dude, go to an arcade. Go try to get laid. Go fucking have a life. The fuck's wrong with your parents? Don't listen to your parents. They're assholes. And I'm making everybody laugh, just making fun of this kid. But then some older guy starts yelling at me. And I go, dude, stop. You want a cock in your ass so badly.
What's the old guy yelling at you?
You're here right now because you hate yourself. I'm like, you want to make it easy? Just go suck a cock. It's going to change your whole life. You're out here. You're doing this shit because you're a homo and you just don't want to admit it. And I'm like, leave them the fuck alone and go join them. That's what you're deep down. You know you're gay. And he's like, you're the devil. You're the devil. You're here to. And I'm like, no, I'm here to help you, dude. Go fucking suck a cock. It's going to change your life. I'm not joking. The next night I walk out, it's the atheists holding up signs going, you know, there is no God and God is bad and God created, you know, there's death and blah. And I go up to them and I go, you're just fucking bad.
Yeah.
Just fucking shut up and go fucking have a beer somewhere. Why are you out here with the fuck? You've got your own religion of atheism. Like, I get it. I get your belief. You know, I don't believe in any kind of fucking order or anything. I don't know what I believe. But go away.
Right.
Fucking stop your religion of trying to
get people, people want to believe anything, whether it's they want to believe in Republicans, they want to believe in God, they want to believe in no God. I've had arguments with atheists where it's so ridiculous, you know, like they're saying science disproves the existence of God. Like, no, it doesn't. Science doesn't disprove anything. What science does is it shows it's, well, first of all, it's statistics and things that can be measured. You know, how can you measure what happens in the afterlife? That's nonsense. How can you measure what happened, you know, what the birth of the universe is? And how do you, I mean, how do we not know that there's something that's far more I mean, I'm not saying that there's a guy in the clouds with a harp,
right.
But what I am saying is that after smoking DMT 7 times and doing mushrooms all the times I've done and all the times in the isolation tank, I've seen shit way crazier than a dude with a harp in the clouds, okay? And I've seen it many, many, many times. I think that the idea that you can tell me what does and doesn't exist is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I cannot believe people actually try to do that. I'm like, how do we know that we're here right now? Or that we're, you know, there could be something so complex. I always tell people when they go, what's your belief on God? I go, when my dog looks at my computer, my MacBook, she can't comprehend the operating system. She does not have the capability. And I believe that as humans, that's how we are with the universe. We don't have the fucking capability. We might be the most intelligent species, but we're not intelligent enough to understand something that's so
fucking... It doesn't mean anything. It's like being the baddest worm. This worm is so smart. Look, it knows how to get around this pebble. You know, it's ridiculous. The idea that we can figure it out, I mean, this is complete and total stoner talk, but the idea that we can figure out the fucking universe, you know? Did you find the Bill O'Reilly, this stuff?
No, it's not on there.
Well, it's not a video, bro. It's not a video.
It's an audio, right?
Well, I think they just transcribed it.
Well, I mean, I saw it on Washington Post and stuff, but it just kind of talked about it.
Did they have the transcriptions, though?
No.
Hey, I want to change the subject for a second. Did you Bobby Lee on here yesterday?
Yeah.
Did he get naked for you?
2 days ago.
He got on our podcast and we could not get him to keep his clothes on.
Really?
Yeah, he was just fucking rubbing his dick on everything. And
wow.
He is so fucking
He's much
funny.
More sedate. I don't know what you guys fed him over there.
I think he was, you know, fucking...
Have you ever told your story that you did at the Storyteller anywhere else other than that show?
No, that was the first time I ever told it.
You should talk...
What story is that?
The whole time, the urban...
Oh, the black show?
Yeah.
You want to tell that story?
I'm not afraid. I mean, it's not racist on my part. What
no,
happened?
It's not.
It's hilarious.
You just took a chance.
Yeah, I went to SUNY... It was called SUNY Farmingdale. It was a State University of New York in Farmingdale, Long Island. And... my manager at the time, I think I'd only been doing comedy maybe 3 years, three or four at the most. I was in New York City. And my manager at the time, Jason Steinberg, do you know Jason?
Yes.
Jason, and I'm only telling his name because I want to burn him on this.
Okay.
Jason at the time had mostly black comics. And all his comics were like Def Jam, doing really well. And so like some great, great comics. He represented a lot of really good guys, Tony Woods, Greer Barnes, all these guys were doing really well at the time and were big in that. Like, so he was always booking these events for like black shows, and I get a call. I'm begging for work because I don't have any work at the time, and I hear him. I'm in his office. I hear him go, "Oh yeah. So you need a comic? Yeah, yeah. And it's not a Def Jam show, right? You sure? Yeah, okay. I think I got the guy. $500." And I'm like, $500? Fuck, that's the most I've ever gotten paid for a gig. And I was like, I want this fucking gig. And he goes, all right, you're going out to SUNY Farmingdale. Your train takes you right out there. It'll be like $10 train ride. He's like, you're the intermission of an auction. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah. It's traditionally, this is like an urban room, but it's just this auction. It's going to be like alumni and stuff. And I'm like, all right. I go out there. On the way out, Tony Woods. Do you know Tony
sure,
Woods?
Sure, I know Tony.
Tony and I are sharing the subway. He's a really good friend of mine. He's going, dog, don't fucking go, dog. They beat up Ralph Harris. They beat him up on stage. And I'm like, what? He's like, they're going to kill you.
God
He's
damn.
Like, dog, don't go.
So why didn't you listen? It's $500.
So I go, no, but it's an auction. It's different. I'm in the intermission. It's an alumni thing.
Right.
So I go. I get there, I see the line of people waiting to go in, and it's not just an urban show. This is fucking, like, urban. Tony told me, he goes, dude, bro, he goes, they're Caribbean black. He's like, Caribbean black are the guys that, they kill me, because I'm American black. He's like, they're going to fuck you up. And I'm like, no. He's like, trust me. So I see the line of guys going in, everybody's gone on FUBU, you know, like, jerseys,
right,
and Timberlands. Every single dude in the crowd, baggy jeans.
By the way, FUBU stands for
For Us By Us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck.
Which is, you know, kind of like separatist as it is.
And
you
it's
know?
Pretty funny when Joey Diaz wears that shirt.
So I go, this is how long ago this was. I go to the payphone. And I page Jason Steinberg, and he calls me on the payphone. And I go, Jason, I'm fucking out of here. I'm out of here. And he goes, you're fine, you're fine. It'll just be funny. I'm like, no, this doesn't look good. He goes, no, you're going to be fine. So I go into the auditorium. Security goes, what are you doing? I go, I'm the comedian. Security goes, fuck, you're the comedian? I quit. He goes, I'm out of here. I'm out of here. Because he knows what's going to happen.
So the security guy saw you. Is it a black guy that was security guy?
Yeah. And he's just like.
So he just says, fuck this. Was fuck, he serious? Or was he joking
totally
around?
Serious. Whoa. They call this gig the Little Apollo.
Oh, my God.
And so I'm like, fuck. So I go back to the phone. I call Jason again. I go, Jason, I'm leaving. I'm leaving. I'm just not doing it. I'm going to die. He's like, Eddie, you're funny. He's like, just get up there and do what you do. And I'm like. So I'm so nervous. You know when you're so nervous. There's right. no chance of you doing well.
Right.
And I go.
Awkward.
So I go down and the MC goes, what do you want to come out to? And I had never come out to music before. I'm like.
That's hilarious.
What do you mean?
And you got any Led Zeppelin?
I was like Freebird. You know, like what the fuck? Like
my name
Sweet
is Michael.
Home,
I have a nickel.
I'm like Puff the Magic Dragon. I don't fucking know what.
God.
And they've got a DJ on the side. And I'm like. And I
so
really,
what'd you come out to?
Well, I don't follow any rap music right. at all, especially at that time. I came from like a place called Fox Chapel, and
I would come out to Fuck the Police.
I didn't know
How
what
about that.
And at the time, I had this,
I had the shitty
Knight Rider joke.
R. Kelly's a good one.
I had the shitty Knight Rider joke about how Kit was gay. It was a gay car,
oh, no.
And he was because they like. Ellen at the time was like coming out, and I go, she's not the first gay character. Kit from Knight Rider was gay, and. He's like, Michael,
hey, Michael,
I'm going to pick you up in a minute. And so I was like, I'll do the Kit joke, and I'll come out to the Knight Rider like rap song.
By the way, get R. Kelly the Zoo. Get that. Pull that shit up.
What, after the audio?
This. Yeah, after
what,
this.
Let's not play audio.
I don't know. We'll edit it out later. We need this. Just trust me.
All right.
Just pull it up on the side. Go
so,
ahead.
So I go backstage, and what they're doing is they're auctioning off dates with students from the school
so
to raise money. Girls
will go on
and
dates
guys.
And
like,
guys.
Like, a guy will come out and all the dudes are backstage lifting, doing pumping up, doing push-ups, and they've got dumbbells. So they're getting
so they
a
look
pump.
Swole.
And they're putting baby oil all over their bodies and taking
God.
Their shirts off.
And they're black as tar.
Yeah. And they are – no one –
Jamaican black, right?
Everyone's ignoring me like, what the fuck are you doing back here? And
oh,
I'm
my
just,
God.
And I swear to God, I grab one of the bottles of rum that they're drinking, and I just start chugging rum. Because I'm like, I'm terrified. So I just start sculling down this rum. And there, I saw one chick there, the one white chick, and I'm like, she's really fucking hot. So they're auctioning dates with the guys and the girls. The guys will come out, they'll just like flex, and everybody will bid. And then the girls will come out and do like a striptease act. They'll bring a guy out, put him in a chair, and grind on him and do like a
Jesus
lap dance,
Christ.
Pour whipped cream, and do all this shit, you know, and they'll go crazy. But they're bidding. They get dinner at Puff Daddy's restaurant. P. Diddy had a restaurant in New York. They get dinner at his place. They get a limo ride to New York and a Broadway show if they win the date. And they're bidding, and I swear to God, dates are going for like $7.
Wow.
And I'm watching, do I hear five?
No
six.
Way.
Sold.
Could you bid? Could you bid?
No. And I'm looking at the hot fucking white chick going, I want to bid. Well, backstage, this.
And she has to go out on a date with the guy?
Yeah.
What if the guy's just disgusting?
Yeah. Well, this is where it gets creepy. So the finale, I'm going to be the intermission, then the finale's this black stripper. And she comes up to me and she's like, hey, you're the comedian? I'm like, yeah. She's like, my name's Heaven. And I'm like, hey, Heaven.
That's
and she's
awesome.
Hot.
My
and
name
so
is
we
Heaven.
Start talking. She goes, you going to stick around and bid on me? And I'm like, and she thinks I'm like this professional, you know, rich comedian and I'm going to be able to bid a lot of money on
right.
it. And
is that
I'm
because
like,
you told her that?
I don't know. I'm like, I can't think about her. She starts talking to me.
She
I actually
just let me get a little taste.
I actually said to her, get away from me, because I was so scared because all the guys were checking her out. And I'm like, I just don't want any problems here.
So you thought you were going to get problems because you were talking to the black chick
yeah.
in front of black guys.
Yeah.
And they're
so
giving you the mad dog look.
So I'm just like, I'm just going
to
fucking.
So has anybody said anything to you? Any guys?
No one. They've
so
like,
it's just white fear.
They've, yeah, totally.
No one's
fear.
Been negative
I,
you to
gotta, you. You got to understand, I grew up in a place where there was like, my high school probably had like one black guy. and you know his last name was Huxtable, and I ran track all through college, and I was a sprinter, but I was separate. Like I hung out with like my white friend, and I wasn't. So like when I moved to New York and I started to become friends with all the black comics, it was like a total new world for me. But this was like putting me in. I was out of my comfort zone.
So what's your opening line?
My opening line, I miss my cue to go out.
Oof.
And they're yelling for me.
Oh, God.
And I've rewritten all my jokes, you know, when you do that.
Panic.
Yeah.
And I go out. This is not good. I'm not confident in this.
And I, like, stumble, almost trip onto stage, and they're already. The MC had been going, where my dogs at? And guys are, woo, woo, woo. And they're running to the front of the stage when he does it and all putting their hands up in the air. And I come out, and I go, hey, what happened before I came out? They auction off the white chick.
Right.
The bidding goes up to like $350. Wow. And every black chick in the place is angry, about to fucking rush the stage.
And stabber.
And I'm like, there's going to be a riot in here. And I'm
so what are the black chicks
and
doing?
I'm
what
like the
saying?
Other white guy, so I'm going down with her.
What are the black girls saying?
They're pissed off. They're screaming. And they're going, you know, do I hear? And so intermission happens. They call me out. And I think my opening line – I think I said something about they're going to be a riot when they bid on the – when they were bidding on the white chick. And I go, you know, I was like – and I get a little
bit –
did you
get any laughs?
I get a little bit of a laugh. And there was some creepy dude that was – like an older dude who was bidding. I made
white guy or black guy?
A black guy that I said was like a pedophile. And they kind of laughed at that. And then I said, you guys, what are you doing with auctions? Didn't you learn your lesson with auction years ago? And – I think it's kind of funny, and I think like I'm gonna get a laugh, like kind of like, oh, he's an insult comp, and I hear like a ooh, and all of a sudden another ooh, and I wasn't quick enough to keep going, and I just
paused.
I paused,
and you let them just leap
on
you.
The boo started building. It was like a wave of booing to where it started to like get this motherfucker off the stage, and people start throwing shit. And I swear to God, I hear get that fucking wait. Get your white motherfucking ass off the stage before I kick your white motherfucking ass. And I'm like standing there, and I'm kind of like in this, like all of a sudden I get hit in the head with a cup, a crumpled up Coke cup, and it pisses me off. And I go, who the fuck threw that? Who? And I don't know why, but you know, you get that rage, and it's like all this shit's happening to me, and I'm like a dog that's been kicked so much, I just start biting everyone.
Right.
I go, who the fuck threw that? And some guy goes, I did. I go, fuck you, you want to throw something? Come on, fucking throw something at me.
Oh, fuck.
The kid starts running towards the stage, and there are fold-out chairs in the front. He picks one of them up and throws it on the stage. And I'm like, at that moment, I go, I'm going to fucking die. And they're pulling cushioning out of the seats and throwing it at me, and they're booing so loud.
Now, here's what's hilarious about Eddie Ift. This is what he says to me when he tells me the story at the beginning of the day. He goes, now, if it happened today, I'd totally be able to be fine with it. He's like, I'd totally be able to make it funny. Comedians always want to think that I have some ruthless bombs in my past, and I have gone over these bombings and said, man, if I could just go back and redo it. There's one time I bombed after Jim Brewer. It was the worst bomb of my entire career. It was devastation. I think I've talked about this before. I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast, did I?
Yeah, I think so.
Brewer, we worked together all weekend, and I could barely follow him. You know, this is like, I'd only been doing comedy maybe three or four years, and he was just too strong to be a middle, and I really wasn't a headliner. I was a fake headliner. Yeah. I could do 45 minutes, but I had to tell my joke slow. You know what I mean? I couldn't, you know, so like when he was on stage and Brewer used to do this bit about going home and he was hammered and his mother turned into a demon and it was like really loud and really animated, and he was just, you know, sometimes a dude just gets in the zone, and Brewer used to get in these crazy zones, man. I used to really enjoy watching him perform because he could just his physical performance, his physical, you know, his presence on stage, fuck, he just would nail it. And this one time, man, we had been doing all weekend, so we'd done two shows Friday, one show Saturday. This was a late show Saturday, and Brewer just knocks it out of the park. And there was a bunch of shit going wrong in my life at the time. One, I had just torn my ACL, so it was for the first time in my life I couldn't work out. I'd never not worked out, so I had all this tension that I didn't know how to deal with. You know, like for me, my whole body from the time time I was like, you know, 14 years old to the time I was, this would happen when I was 22 or 23. My body had been designed just to fucking, to constantly be working, constantly be exerting all this energy, whether it was in kickboxing or wrestling or something. There was like this constant, then that was the only way I coped with stress. That was gone, okay? And I had moved from New York to Boston, so no ACL, it blows out, and moved to New York, or from Boston to New York. I have no friends. I don't know anybody there. I'm living with my grandfather and my grandmother. My grandmother was dying of an aneurysm. She had an aneurysm. Jesus. They gave her 72 hours to live. She lived for 12 years, okay? Jesus. And I'm staying in their old house that they bought in 1945 in Newark, New Jersey, which is now in a war zone. I mean, while I'm there, the next-door neighbor's door gets broken down with a battering ram. They arrest him for selling crack. I mean, no joke, man. It was a scary neighborhood. It used to be an Italian neighborhood, then it went just total chaos. So I'm staying at the house, and grandma, like, she died. Both of them are dead now, but back then she couldn't move. She was completely paralyzed. She would get bed sores, and she could feel some things, and sometimes she would just let out these soul, like, almost like she was emptying herself of the pain, and the only way to do it was to let out this horrible screech. So I'd be in the house, and I'd be, like, wandering around. Maybe I'd go to the kitchen and grab something to eat, and I'd hear, Aah! It was like an animal, like a wounded animal. She couldn't die. It just, she, like, was so resilient. She had those Italian peasant genes, and she was just so fucked up, but yet she hung in there for, like, 12 years. Wow. So I'm living in this house, right? And I just broken up with my girlfriend and my manager, God bless him, great guy, but it was back in the day where we talked about, like, when you're not doing so well, then everybody has advice for you. And his advice was, you should dress nice. Like, you know, you're a good-looking guy. You should dress nice on stage. So my stupid ass, I'm wearing these, like, nice pants and a nice belt and, like, a club shirt that you would go out clubbing. And I had a nice head of hair back then. It was delicious. And I'm wearing shiny shoes and shit. And I just look like the fucking biggest asshole. I just look like some club shithead, some goofy Italian cunt that's 22 years old that doesn't know anything about the world, right? And I'm on stage, and I am panicking. I remember Brewer got off stage, and the MC was about to bring me up, and I was off stage when Brewer came up. And I remember he said, hey, have fun up there. Have fun. They're great. And I go, I'm going to fucking eat it. I remember saying it to him, like, dude, I'm not fucking confident right now. I'm not feeling good right now. Oh, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. And I just was not prepared. I just went up there, and I went into flames. Just went into one girl. I remember a girl in the audience, she goes, I was just eating dick up there, and I was editing my material and chopping the jokes as I go along. And one girl goes, you're kind of hot, but you're not funny. Oh. And there's nothing you can say when you know that that's true. Not that I'm kind of hot, but that I'm not funny. And then another guy goes, you fucking suck. You fucking suck. He's this big meathead.
See,
dude.
I snapped.
I had nothing I could say. He was right. I fucking sucked. I knew I fucking sucked. There was nothing I can do. And I was supposed to do 45 minutes. I wound up doing like 30. I got a few laughs. I started getting a few laughs, but they were so shaky. It was just the worst set ever, the worst bombing ever. And I still, to this day, will go back in my head. And that was fucking 20 years ago.
My gig was still, to this day, the worst one I've ever had.
And you go back and you, like, replay it over in your head. Like, okay, I could have said this.
The heat that goes through your body when you're bombing. There's, like, people don't understand when you're bombing, there's a hot, like, flash. You almost get hot flashes. So I'm having it when the guy threw the that knocked me out of my aggression. When the chair came up onto the stage, I was like, okay, I'm not gonna fight a crowd, and I gotta get the fuck out of here. The girl on the side of the stage that booked me is going, get off. And I think I was supposed to do like 40 minutes, and I think I'm at 45 seconds or something, or 4 minutes. I forget. It was so short. She's going, get off. And I go, this is how badly I wanted the money. I go, where's my check?
Oh, my God.
From the stage. But no one could hear me. Even with the microphone, they were booing that loud. I just looked to the side. I go, where's my check? I go, am I still getting paid? And she's like, Yes. And I went, no, I want to see the check. I want to make sure.
While you're on stage?
Because I always was under this impression like, you have to do your time to get paid.
Right.
And they're getting me off before my time. So are they going to, like, not pay me? So I want that $500.
Need that money, baby.
And I'm going, I was willing to stand up there for 35 more minutes and take the abuse. I wanted the money so badly. Wow. And
Don't you think, though, that you learn so much about your comedy from bombing? Don't you think that it's like the ultimate?
Yeah.
It's the ultimate school.
Fuck yeah. And I right then I said, I go, Let me see the checks. So they went and got the check. That's it. That's why I was up there 4.5 minutes. Right. They had to go get the check, come back.
And then you got off stage.
I get off stage and they rush me out the back door. Like people around me because they're afraid a riot's going to start. Jesus. We go out the back door. The stripper is waiting there. And she's smoking weed with a couple guys out there. And she goes, hey, where are you going? And I'm like, you didn't see what just fucking happened? She goes, yeah, that was some bullshit. And I'm like, so she goes, stick around though, you know, and bid on me. I go, are you fucking kidding me?
Stick around
and
bid on me.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Do you think they would have let it go? They would, the audience members would have forgotten.
I don't know. But I got her phone number. She gave me her phone number. She's like, give me a call sometime. And I get in a car. Do you remember? This is like 1997 or 98 that this happened or whatever. The guy drives me to the train station in a TR7.
Nice.
And it's this little black dude.
Triumph.
And he's so fucked up. He's been drinking so much rum. And he's driving like 100 miles an hour. And I'm going, because he wants to get back. And I'm like, dude, slow the fuck down. You're going to kill us. And he goes, man, you suck. He's like, you are terrible. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. And he's like, no, man. Like, I've seen comedians. You're the worst I've ever seen. And he's driving me to the train station telling me how bad I am. And
he's a black dude?
Yeah. And I get on the train. It was the most racist I've ever been in my life because I'm just looking at every black person, like, blaming them for what happened to me. But I get
imagine up, living your whole life like that. Welcome to being black.
But I get home. And at the time, I was living
people
with
people constantly fucking with you? Imagine.
Yeah. I mean, it was like the reverse. Yeah. I learned right then. That was a great learning experience. I get home. I'm living with my sister and at the time. And this goes back to like answering machine time. Like people had answer machines and right. No cell phone. Well, I must have called the stripper. I don't even remember calling the stripper, but I must have. Because my grandfather dies. And we're on the way to my grandfather's funeral. We had already just done the viewing or whatever when you go then or from church and you go to the cemetery.
Right.
We're going to the cemetery. I mean, my dad had one of those, like, he had a Cadillac, I remember, with a car phone built into the car.
Nice.
And it's my dad, my mom, and, like, two of my sisters and me. And my sister decides to check her voicemail, the answer machine at home, and puts it on speaker.
And she listens to the stripper.
And this, I swear to God, it comes on. It goes, it's like next message, beep. Hi, Eddie. This is Heaven, the stripper you met out at SUNY Farmingdale.
She calls herself a stripper.
I'm just returning your call. And my sister looks at me and goes, at Papap's funeral.
That's what his name was,
really, Papap? She goes, really, at Papap's funeral.
That's wow. Hilarious.
That's great stuff.
Don't you think though that you, like, your comedy makes these big leaps after these horrible, disastrous bombings?
Yeah, you absolutely have to go through it.
I get fired up even if I see like a bad review online. Like I'll read 10 great reviews of like a show that I was at, and then one guy says, "I'm still waiting for my first laugh." Yeah, fucking suck.
That's the one that
gets me. Just get like a little anxiety. Like, man, I gotta work harder.
But
like,
see,
I think that shit's good for you. I really do.
I'm different. I don't want to blow smoke up your ass, but I need good comics to inspire me, and I see so much shit comic. And I saw you one night working out, and I was like, fuck. Fuck, he's going deep. He's going deep and he's not afraid. And he's fucking like when you're doing the monkeys, we're just a bunch of monkeys on a rock spinning through. And I'm like, fuck. And I just went, fuck, I got to go home and write. Fuck. Like one of those.
Well,
like,
that's awesome.
I said to you after the show, I go, fuck you. And I like had to hurry home and start like just and I like to watch really good comics. Like I'm one of these comics. I love when I get to pick my middle act. I love to bring the best fucking comedian I can bring.
Dude, I go on the road with Joey Diaz.
And does he just
Joey Diaz is the funniest guy that's ever walked the face
of
the earth.
Really?
I've never laughed more at anybody ever in my life. 23 years of being a comic. Have you ever met anybody funnier than Joey?
No, I mean, it's like a cartoon. He's just explosive with energy. He just makes you happy. He's just ridiculous.
He makes you funnier, too. He makes me funnier. I'm funnier when I work with Joey. I feel better.
Yeah, that's how the dude Brian McCarthy is.
I feel the same way. But what you said, like I saw Dave Chappelle once at the Comedy Store, and I felt the same way. I want to go home and write. I'm totally inspired by great comics, too. Like I saw Louis at the Improv in Hollywood, Louis C.K., and I wanted to go home and write. It was really a great performance. And Norton recently. I saw Norton at Cap City in Austin. Fucking great. And same feeling. I want to go write. But I also get inspired by people who don't like me. Even fucking, you know, haters online. I can get a million people who love me. Dude, it's the greatest fucking show I've ever seen. It's amazing. And one person who's like, you know, fucking hang it up, stick to UFC. I'll go, oh, what, bitch? You know, like, I'll get fired up to
have to zone them
work
out,
harder. Yeah. It's good to zone them out, but it's good to be humble. I really believe, I mean, it's a bad feeling to have someone negatively critique your work. It's a terrible feeling, but I think there's something to it that's good for an artist. There's something that keeps you sort of humble and balanced, especially in this this direct adulation relationship that you have with an audience. You know, you're immediately giving them what they want to hear, and they immediately laugh, and they tell you how much they love you. I mean, you can get imbalanced by that. You can get lazy. I mean, we both know comics that got fucking super, super lazy. And one of the reasons is, like, you know, they're not, for whatever reason, there's not enough balance, you know? They got to a point where it was too easy for them, too many people being nice to them, and they lose it. You know, Chris Rock once had a really important thing that I read where he was talking about how he bombed really hard once going on after Martin Lawrence. Which I did too, by the way, a bunch of times at the Comedy Store. When I was on Hardball, the show that nobody ever saw on Fox, I would go on after a lot of guys at the Comedy Store. Mitzi Shore, God bless her, did a tremendous amount for me early in my career. And one of the things that she did for me, she always put me on the most devastating comedians in the night right on after them. Like Dice Clay, I went on after Dice Clay 100 times. Richard Pryor, I went on after Richard Pryor when he was in a wheelchair, when he couldn't even talk for 5 weeks. Every time Martin Lawrence would have a set, this is back when Martin Lawrence had that TV show, he was a fucking destroyer. I had never seen an Aston Martin either. Martin Lawrence was in the back parking lot with an Aston Martin. I was like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, me and a couple other comics were like circling around. I was driving a Volkswagen Scirocco. I was like scratching my chin, like, what the fuck is this, man? This thing's crazy. And Martin would just devastate the main room. I mean, devastate. When Martin Lawrence was in his prime, that guy does not get enough respect. Because if you go back and watch like some of his old stand-up, he's just fucking funny. And that show, Martin, dude, that show is the writing was like non-existent. But he carried the whole show with all his characters, and he pretended to be women. He's fucking funny. Yeah, and I would be backstage, same, just like the Brewer night. I mean, at least I'd been past the Brewer thing. Like, it happened like a couple years before that. So I had like recovered, and I knew how to like get out of the gate strong. But it's 90% black audience, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just ready to go on after him. And he's crushing. And then he's like, who's coming up next? You know, he has to bring me up. So Martin Lawrence brings me up. You know, he calls over to the piano guy. Piano guy says, Joe Rogan. And he goes, all right, y'all, give it up for this next comedian, Mr. Joe Rogan. Very nice guy, says. And I just go up and eat a bag of shit, of just a big manure bag that you would buy like at a fucking farm depot, you know, just filled with shit. I'm just chewing up there. And people are getting up in droves and leaving. But all that stuff makes you way better. It makes you a way better comic because you realize you don't ever want to feel that feeling. It's like you feel the fire behind your feet and it makes you run faster. Like, you're only going to run a certain amount when you're not pushed.
But
you know?
I feel like it's funny, like, sometimes I just go, oh, I'm shit, I suck now, blah, blah, blah. But I don't realize that I don't have the ability to bomb like that anymore. I mean, it can happen in a bad situation now, like something really fucked up happening. But, like, I used to have to in New York, you know, a million times. Esty used to do that at the Cellar. She'd just wait and put you up after the hardest person to make sure you were ready for it. And I had to follow Attell forever, every night in the Cellar. And that's how I got so dark, because Attell would just – his jokes were so amazing and so dark too that it was like I had to go to a darker place than him.
Right. You almost have to like pick up the frequency where he leaves it off.
And I remember just bombing so bad in the Cellar that I would just start freestyling, just saying the worst things I could say, like talking about killing babies and shit, like trying to get out of this horrible hole that I would just shock the fuck out of the audience.
And it never works.
And it was like
– that never works.
It was almost like if you go into a zone though of like, I'm going to pretend like they're not here and I'm just going to just keep saying this shit and hopefully they're going to come around because this is so painful.
Right.
And I'm in this terrible, terrible bomb. But I mean, I had – like I watched you on – what was it? Any evening at the Caroline's Comedy Hour. That's where I saw you first when I was like a little kid that I didn't even do comedy. And I'm like watching you and you were dirty. I remember you and Sarah were on it and Sarah was dirty. And so as a little kid, I'm like, these are good comics. These two, these are comedians.
It was so hard for me back then to even come up with 7 minutes of material that I could do on TV. I would have to sit down and go over my shit. I was like, God, I can't do that bit. I can't do this bit. I might have had an hour of material. I might have had five I could do
on
TV.
But I couldn't imagine you bombing because of the way your act was. Like, you had the confidence and the dirtiness and everything. So I was like, this guy can't bomb. It's not. So you probably had a lot less bombs than I've had.
Wow. Well, yeah. Well, you know, I've had a bunch, man. I don't know about that. I don't know how many you've had, but especially at the store, I had a gang of them in the early days when I was going on after, you know, like really good comics over and over and over again. I had quite a few bombings.
Yeah.
But the early days were way worse. The open mic days were fucking brutal. Because you're really not supposed to be up there talking. You're really not good enough. And then, look, Brian has been doing stand-up. He's been doing open mic nights just for a short period of time. So you're in that kind of zone area where you're learning it and figuring it out. You're in that stage of your life where sometimes, you know, I've seen you go on stage and you're trying out a new joke and it just doesn't work and you're just fucked. You know, you're just stuck in this rut. You know, you're right there right now, right?
Well, I had a horrible thing the other day where somebody I knew was sitting in the front row, and they thought, "Oh, this is awesome! I could talk to Brian while he's on stage." Oh. And so the whole time she's just like making me going meow meow like that, or she like I said something like, "Oh, I just broke up with my ex. I hate that bitch," and she's like, "Oh, whatever, you're not over her," and like said it loud enough where like it kept on like fucking me up, and then it just throws you off. And I felt it. I felt way off my tracks, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I never feel. I haven't really felt like. Bomb.
Where you gave me anxiety.
Except for that.
Because I had to go on afterwards and I was like, this bitch going to talk to me.
Right.
Fuck. She going to talk to me too? Like,
you're good
like,
at shutting them up, though.
Yeah, but I don't want to. I don't want. I'd rather not. You know, people always say, "Oh, you know, you're so good with hecklers. You must love it when people talk shit." Nah. No. I want everybody to have fun. I don't want to have to ruin someone's mind.
The Bob Hope joke, that one that I've talked a few times on the podcast before, when I did that and I was booed and hissed, I took off comedy for 5 years, you know. So
it's a funny joke. Wow. Bob Hope died. He goes, "Did you hear Bob Hope died?" Yeah, they're going to fly out his body to entertain all the dead troops.
That's hilarious.
It was the day he
great fucking
it was the day he died though, and it was like right during, like, you know, after post election.
Brian's
like,
got some great jokes. Can I say what my favorite joke of yours is?
Which one?
The ones you're doing right now.
Oh, okay.
About your dog.
All right.
He goes, "I have a bunch of cats and dogs from other relationships. It's like whenever we break up, I keep their cat, I keep their dog." He goes, "And they all have the same personality as the girls that I was dating. It's really funny. Like, all of them hate it when I come in their face."
Now I break it down to each animal. There's
a comedian, Chris Wainhouse, from Australia. I think he's a Kiwi, but he lives in Australia, and he's really dark and really funny. Really good
joke
writer.
What's a Kiwi?
New Zealander.
Oh.
And his name's Chris Wainhouse.
I should have known that.
And he writes jokes. He writes a ton. I don't know his name on Twitter, but he writes tons of jokes all the time. He did a joke about the crocodile hunter the day the crocodile hunter died.
Yeah.
And somebody in the audience yells out, "Too soon!" And he goes, "Too soon? I would have done that joke on the fucking boat."
I said something about the crocodile hunter when he died, and I actually felt bad about it. And the reason why I felt bad about it, what I said was, I go, "He dies." I go, "My act gains 10 minutes. I don't see the loss." You know, that's what I wrote on a message board. And I just, you know, flippantly, you know, comics, we'll say shit like that just to fuck with each other. Like, have you ever done the Opie and Anthony show?
No, never done it.
Great fucking show. And it's everyone tries to say that, like, Louis C.K. will say the meanest shit to Norton, who will say the meanest shit to Opie.
Yeah.
They say the meanest shit back to, but it's not real. It's like you're trying to get laughs. And someone said, you know, "Hey, man, this guy has like a family and children. What if his children read that?" And I went, "Oh, shit." And then I thought about it. I'm like, okay, I don't even really think that. I don't even really believe
that.
Right. And I was really mad at myself because I would have totally written a crocodile hunter bit if it wasn't for the fact that I felt bad that I said that, which was like very short-sighted and it wasn't really even funny. It was just like a quick, easy, cheap, like, jibe. And I thought about it. I said, "God damn it, I fucked myself out of a good crocodile hunter bit
right
now." Because for sure, that's like right up my alley. You know, like, I'm fucking, no one's more fascinated by predatory animals than me. And when a dude who fucks with animals his entire career, "Look, it's a snake, I'm calling him his hat." When a guy like that fucking gets killed by an animal, I mean, there's a fucking wealth of material there.
I said in Australia, I said before he died, I watch the show. I go, they all think America loves the crocodile hunter. They think we all
most
watch
of us
it.
Do,
but it wasn't like, because they're not as into him as we are.
Really?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
They all kind of think he's a freak, and they're not that.
Do Australians have a thing about Australians who become famous somewhere else? And
it's
then
called tall
back?
Poppy syndrome. They try to cut down the tall flower.
Yeah, because Jeffries was pissed because he would go back to Australia and people wouldn't buy tickets to his show.
Right.
You know, he's like, "I've got a fucking HBO special."
Yeah. It's
that's my worst Jeffries accent ever.
he doesn't have a lot to complain about right now. Things are going
Oh, he's
well.
Going great.
But my joke was, I'm watching the show. I go, I admit I watch the show, and I watch it every day, hoping every day will be that day. Because it's going to happen.
Right.
You know, you put your head in fucking crocodile's mouth enough. It's
right.
And then when he died, you know, it was like a funny joke. Everyone used to laugh at it. Then when he died, my agent over in Australia called me. He goes, mate, you're fucked. I go, what? He goes, they're playing your clip on the radio. Oh. And I was like, oh, no. So they were playing it like these two like disc jockey DJs were playing at this one station. They thought it was kind of funny just playing my bit over and over.
Right.
So I thought, oh, this is fucking, I'm dead. I'm dead. Right. In America, you know, I would have been gone into hiding.
Yeah, but Aussies not were so.
Like, Aussies wrote to me like, mate, you're fucking champion, mate. We're listening. It's fucking hilarious. And I was like, oh, I want to go to Australia more. These guys are fucking cool.
They're fun, man. You know what I love? They call you a legend.
Yeah,
you're a legend, mate.
Champion and a legend.
They'd say that in England all the time. You're a legend, mate. You're a legend. You're a legend, mate. All right, speaking of legend, before we get out of here, I found the Bill O'Reilly thing, and I got to read it because it's so fucking ridiculous. Whenever you think about Bill O'Reilly, no matter what, you think about his opinions, this is what you need to know. And this is some fucking voicemail that he left from some woman. Her name was Andrea McCarris, and she sued him for sexual harassment. And this is what he goes, you would basically be in the shower, and then I would come in, and you would have your back to me, and I would take the loofah thing and kind of soap up your back, rub it all over you, get you to relax, hot water, and you know, you'd feel the tension drain out of you, and you'd still be with your back to me, and then I would kind of put my arm. It's one of those mitts, one of those loofah mitts, you know? So I got my hand in it, and I would put it around in front, kind of rub your tummy a little bit with it, and then my other hand would start to massage your boobs, get your nipples really hard, because I like that, and you have really spectacular boobs. So anyway, I'd be rubbing your big boobs and getting your nipples really hard, kind of kissing your neck from behind, and then...
Is it wrong that I have a boner right now?
Yes, it is. And then I would take the other hand with the falafel thing. The falafel, I don't know what that means, and just put it on your pussy, and but you'd have to do it real light, just kind of a tease business. What a fucking goofy cunt.
I'm listening.
Like,
to
any chick is going to hear that and go, oh, yeah, loofah spine.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Ah, who's going to get off on this shit?
Old, broken people. Oh. He's, like, trying to romance her, you know?
I'm like, can I choke you? And
delirious falafel egomaniac. Like a Jewish food? Falafel?
Falafels, yeah, Middle Eastern food, but I don't think that's what he meant.
I want to slap you with some hummus.
A falafel thing? That's not what he meant.
I want to shove some chickpeas up your pussy.
You just use the wrong word, maybe. I don't know. But that's understand that this is the kind of human being you're dealing with. And all this shit that you see in the fucking in the public eye is just nonsense. You know, it's just what we said before, that people, when they become famous and they get adulation, they start all of a sudden believing the bullshit. They believe their own hype. It's step one to losing it all. Like R. Kelly in his fucking Zoo song. You got that, bitch?
Yeah, do you want to play it at the end, though?
Yeah,
let's can cut it out at the very end.
Yeah, let's cue it up. Cue it up, and we'll play it at the very end.
Do you know the Angelica Houston? I think it was her that said it. She goes, I go by the motto, never pick it up, never put it down. Like, if you don't take the adulations, you can't take the criticism. Like, focus on yourself. Don't focus on, like, what other people say. And I try to do that. Like, because if
but
I
you can
there,
learn
you know,
from people, though.
You know, but when you walk out of a show and people, you're great. What, you know, that's just your opinion. Because you're going to hear you suck, too.
Right.
And so that way I don't take the you're great. I just go, oh, thanks. But I don't let it soak in. Because otherwise.
You know what I like hearing?
Review.
I like hearing we had a great time.
Yeah,
that's what I like hearing. I don't want to hear you're great. I mean, if you think that, thank you very much. I'm trying. I'm working hard. Keep going. I do it all for whoever likes to see the comedy. That's what I'm doing it for. I mean, that's I think you alter your motivation as you get older and as you get more successful and as you kind of get a better understanding of what you're doing, like as an artist. And I think initially I just wanted to get laughs. I just wanted to for me. I wanted to prove that I could be good at this. I wanted to get some success. I wanted to do it for me. But then once you get the success, then you have to change your rational or your motivation has to change. And it has to become, in order to stay good and to stay relevant, it has to become about the art. You have to be obsessed with creating good stuff. You have to be obsessed with doing something that people are going to enjoy, those pops of brilliance when a new bit comes to life.
Did you go through a change, though? Because I remember like when I watched you when I was younger and I was like, oh, I liked you because at that point in my life, I was into like, I wanted to hear like tits and ass and fucking pussy. And that's, to me, you were that kind of comic. And,
yeah.
And even in the improv was guys with their sleeves rolled up going, what's the deal with? And you were going, you know, fuck that pussy.
Yeah.
And
I was a savage.
And then,
I mean, you think about how I got into stand-up comedy. I was a fucking kickboxer.
But then you changed. Now you do this kind of intellectual type material that's like, you know, like what you talk about now.
Well, when I was 21, I still have a million dick jokes, but when I was 21, I had nothing to say about anything else. I had no opinions. I had no opinions on society. I had no opinions on life. I didn't think about religion at all, except it scared me, you know, because I went to Catholic school when I was little. All I thought about when I was 21 was pussy.
Yeah.
That is all. I was a fucking savage. That's all I thought about. Here I was, a former martial arts teacher and fighter who is now a professional comic, and I was making my living working in bars and doing stand-up and trying to make girls like me. I mean, that's what I was doing.
Yeah,
and all I was obsessed with, yeah, and all I was obsessed with was fucking. And people would say that to me, like, your act is all about sex. You know, why is your act all about sex? Because I'm fucking 22, and my hormones are blasting inside of my body like a broken fire hydrant slamming against the walls of my heart. Like, what are you talking about? That's all I'm thinking about. I don't know anything else. I had no opinions. I could say sex jokes on stage and people could laugh. You know why? Because these are things that I was actually thinking about, so I had actual humorous points of view on it. And people would say, well, your act is so dirty. Well, am I supposed to not talk about what I'm obsessed with? Should I talk about what you're obsessed with? I guess I should have balance. I mean, it did go through a long time where, you know, especially if I do like a half an hour set, it was too much sex talk. It was like, yeah. I was like, enough already, dude. You must have something else. You know, how many cum shot jokes can you have? You know, but it's, as I got older, then I started, you know, looking at the world and, you know, then, you know, actually thinking about things and then actually forming opinions and, you know, and deeply considering those opinions before I ever thought about taking them to the stage. I mean, I had opinions about things for years and years before I ever tried to, like, put them in a humorous situation. It's just, you know, a matter of developing as a human being. But, you know, as your motivation changes and as your perception changes, I mean, it's just you just mature, you grow, you think about things differently.
Now, but is your audience, your UFC audience, the guys that are like MMA guys and like that kind of stuff, are they on the same mindset as you now with your kind of material?
Dude, you'd be amazed, first of all, about UFC fans. First of all, the broad spectrum of UFC fans. There's some fucking brilliant, intelligent UFC fans. I've met some people in the mixed martial arts business, whether they're trainers or competitors or, you know, people who just do it, you know, as a hobby or involved in a management aspect. Fucking brilliant people who are huge fans of the sport. You know, I met a bunch of them, like the guys who own the UFC. They're fucking smart people, man.
Yeah.
They're not cavemen. I mean, Dana White's crazy and he swears a lot and stuff, but he's a fucking really introspective, like a very considerate and compassionate person. Like these guys, like Dana White recently saved some Thailand girl. There was a girl who needed, like, I believe it was liver surgery, and she was the daughter of a trainer at Tiger Muay Thai. Somebody put a thread about it on the underground that this girl's going to die unless she gets this surgery within like the next 8 weeks. Dana White fucking paid for all of it.
Wow.
You know, he's like one of those guys. He's not an asshole. He's not a meathead. You know, he's a really good dude.
Well,
these people that, you know, everybody looks at like cage fighting fans and they think of, oh, they must be assholes with skulls on their shirts. Yeah, a lot of them are. But a lot of them aren't.
Well,
you know, and even in the assholes with skulls on their shirts, they can be led. They can all be.
Well,
everybody can look at things in a more fun, friendly way.
Well, I'd imagine that like cage fighters to themselves are kind of perfectionist kind of guys. And then like, what was that thing I texted you one day and asked you about the quote about if you can do one thing well, you can do.
Yeah, Miyamoto Musashi. That's why I got this tattoo. See that shit?
Because I find
Musashi that, versus a tiger.
Like those, I do that CrossFit stuff, and all the guys I do CrossFit with are obsessive compulsive and very intellectual. You find these guys are great athletes and you would think they're just dumb fucking, you know, can climb a rope and fucking power lift, you know, deadlift 500 pounds. But you start finding out they know everything about nutrition and then everything about this.
Right.
And then it goes
discipline. Dumb people are not disciplined.
Right, right.
Dumb people can work hard if they're like in a football camp and the coach is screaming at you every day, or, you know, if you have to, you know, you're in the army or something like that. But when you have to motivate yourself to go to the gym and you have to motivate yourself to buy the proper nutrition, and that takes intelligence. It takes a certain amount of discipline.
Yeah. So I've seen that these mixed martial arts, I would say that the guys that do fight and are really into it are probably good fans that really get all your material and get into like the intellectual shit. But I'm thinking like the average guy that likes to sit at home and goes, hey, you know, I just want to see some fucking blood.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Does he come to your show and be like, tell me a dick joke?
Yeah, there's that. But you know what, man? I make sure, or I try very hard to make sure that my jokes are first and foremost funny. You know, whatever my point of view is on something, it has to be digestible to a lot of people. Like, there's some weird shit that I might think is funny that if I had an audience filled with, you know, only like guys like you or Duncan or, you know, someone who's like a very smart person that's, you know, of a certain age, I could talk to about almost anything. I would do different material.
Yeah, if it was
just you guys, you know, but to an audience full of a bunch of people. First of all, I want everybody to have fun. You know, I want like a joyous, fun, festive atmosphere. I want it to be like an hour long party. You know, and a party filled with ideas and thoughts, and then you know that I'm not coming from a place of ego. I'm not an egomania. I'm coming from a place of just, let's just figure this out. Let's try to put this all together. Yeah. It's not me. It's not about me. It's about these ideas. It's about fun. It's about having a good goddamn time up there.
Yeah.
So it's the ideas. But I've got a lot of weird shit in my act about time travel and the Large Hadron Collider. And there's some shit that there's some place. Sometimes when I'm on stage, where I go, goddamn, I'm taking these motherfuckers down a fucking twisty road here. I hope they're with me. You know, I hope they're with me when the punchlines come, because they might have been like, you know, after 5 minutes of Large Hadron Collider rant, when I get to the end, they're like, what the fuck is he talking about? You know,
people are taking notes. I better go home and read about this shit.
I think, you know, I initially sort of, you know, did comedy just to try to get laughs. And this is what I always said, that there's like a bunch of different stages of comedy. I think the first stage is you do anything you can to get a laugh. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've said some hacky lines in your life that you're embarrassed about. I mean, I look back the last time, I think in 1997 or 90, no, earlier than that. I was on news radio, though. It was like 95, 96. I told some woman, hey, I don't come to your job, and slap the dicks out of your mouth. I couldn't believe I still used that. Like in 90, I used it one time. It was in Montreal at the Comedy Works. Some chick said something. Yeah. And right after I said it, I'm like, man, really? You didn't even dig into your bag. You just grabbed the most obvious, stupid, hacky line. I still think about that to this day. You know, I think you initially you're just trying to get laughs. And then once you get good, then it goes from what makes me laugh? You know, instead of just trying to make anybody laugh with like a tool, like I have a hammer, look at my hammer, I'm going to hit the nail, dong, then it becomes your perspective. It's like it becomes, you know, this actually is funny to me. And then it becomes, how do you make someone laugh with your opinions on things? Like what are your unique points of view that you can somehow or another turn into comedy? So to me, there's like been three stages in my life. The first stage was just say anything, even if you didn't believe in it. I said a lot of stupid shit about gay people, about whatever the fuck I was... If I thought it would work, you know, to me it was like, is this a brick? Can I kill a rat with it? Let's kill a rat. You know, it was just a tool.
I think I followed your model, and I'm just, you know, years behind you doing the same thing. Where a good analogy I heard was golf. They say when you learn to golf, just fucking hit the ball as far as you can fucking hit it, and then hone your swing and bring it in instead of trying to hit it right and then trying to hit it far. So like, try to kill it first.
Yeah,
just try to learn how to kill, and once you kill, you'll get all that confidence, and you'll never be scared. And then hone it in the good, you know, really creative, interesting jokes with your point of view. But you can't go out there initially with that.
Yeah.
Some guys probably have.
They try, but they seem so pretentious, especially when you're 20 and you're breaking down the government. Please shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Please go get hit in the head by a ball. You know, please get punched. You know, go do something where you develop some character. You know,
we'll talk about this off air, but there's someone who does that right now.
I'm sure. There's a lot of people who do it. You know, you want to be somebody, man. You want to be Bill Hicks, you know. There's a great fucking – the Atlanta Punchline, one of the great clubs. You ever worked there?
No.
One of the best clubs in the country. Fucking fantastic club. Anyway, the Atlanta Punchline has a back room, like a green room, and it's got a bunch of shit written on the wall. And one thing that I took a picture of, put it on my Mo blog back when I had a Mo blog. I've got to find it. It must be on my – it said, quit trying to be Hicks.
It's on Fragmob. You still have an account at Fragmob.
Do I? Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, go check that shit out, bitches.
Check this out, Joe. Red Pancake. Redpancake.net.
I don't think I need to see that. Go to redpancake.net. It's some sort of horrible venereal disease some poor fuck has, and Brian wants you to look at it. Eddie, where are you going to be next, man?
I am in Australia. Pretty much. Well, I
got it. We got a lot of Australian people that listen to the show, so tell us where.
Yeah, I'm doing the Adelaide Fringe Festival. I'll be at the Arts Theatre.
Okay.
For 10 nights only, and then I'm doing Brisbane.
Only? 10 nights in a row? Yeah. Jesus Christ, I've never done 10 nights anywhere. That's incredible.
That's pretty cool.
450 seats, so start buying tickets.
Damn. Holy shit.
And then
you pack places in Australia, huh?
It's going well. I'm really happy.
Is that weird to be super famous in another country?
I'm not super famous at all. I mean, Arge is super famous. I'm happy with how it's going, but I would like to see the same. I told you yesterday, I go, it's not like... I love Australia. It's a great fucking place. I love to surf.
But you want to do the same thing here?
Yeah, I like being around my family, and I want my parents to not think I'm a failure.
holla at your boy. So what is your website?
Eddie Ift, IFFT.com.
And on Twitter, it's Eddie Ift.
Facebook. I'm on Facebook.
Facebook. And the Facebook is Twitter. Easy to find.
And our you have podcast, a fan page. Podcast is Talking Shit.
Yeah, and your podcast, is it back up now?
It's if you Google it, you will find it. You don't have to go through iTunes. Everybody thinks you have to go through iTunes.
So Libsyn has it.
Libsyn
it's available
has it.
No matter what. All the episodes are available, and you can get to Libsyn, I assume, from EddieIft.com.
EddieIft.com.
And they just took it down because of the name.
They took it down.
Of a title.
Yeah, in the title.
That's crazy.
And we fucked up.
Well,
and
he got lucky.
Didn't
they didn't took it down from, I guess I have to eat this guy's cunt.
Well,
yeah, they should have taken it down from that.
Yeah, we just do podcast number one. And
that's what we should have done. And
we just have the guests.
I understand their thing, trying to keep children away from like explicit stuff. I understand. We fucked up. We fucked up.
I don't think they have a filter, though. You think they would have some kind of sense?
Right.
They do, and that's what they did. They bumped us off for breaking the rules, and we just didn't know. And
yeah, so they killed all your feed, and now you have to get a whole new feed?
Yeah, we're going to have to get a whole new feed.
So all your subscribers, you have 35,000 subscribers.
I think
you have
more now.
Wow,
and
you lost them all.
We're going to lose all our subscribers. So
God damn.
We're going to have to resubscribe.
So please, folks, go to iTunes and resubscribe. Is it up now? Is it new feed
I don't think it's up till tomorrow.
Okay, go to eddieift.com and download it. It's hilarious. Eddie Ift is hilarious, and Jim Jeffries is hilarious too. So the podcast is a fucking can't miss, you dirty bitches.
Joe's going to be there someday. He's going to drive all the way to Venice and do our fucking show.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I am going to do it. Tell me when. We'll work it out. Tell me when. Maybe
you
next
heard
week.
It. You heard it. We
maybe next
them.
Week. Are you guys around next week?
Yeah, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Okay. Maybe we'll figure out next week. I know I was supposed to do Tuesday with, what is that dude's name? Jean LaJoie from
the
league.
Dude.
How do you say his name?
I think you said it right.
He's hilarious. Some of his fucking songs on YouTube are genius. And he's actually a fan of the podcast and actually asked to be on. I don't want to brag or anything, but he's coming on. So he's going to be on next Thursday. So maybe I'll do it someday next week. We'll figure it out. Venice. Talking Shit, and we will definitely I'll put that shit on Twitter and let everybody know, and we'll try to get you guys back on iTunes by then. And so that's it. If you go to joerogan.net and click on the link for the Fleshlight, again, the Fleshlight sponsors the show. Thank you very much to them, and you get 15% off if you type in the name Rogan. This Friday night, I am at Mandalay Bay Theater with Joe Diaz and Ari Shaffir. It was not. I'm getting some messages where people are saying it's sold out, but I don't know if that's true. It was. It's very close, though, and it will by the time the showtime rolls around, which is tomorrow night. And then tonight, Ari Shaffir has a storytell show at the Improv, and I'm going to go down and fuck around there, too. So that's it for the show this week for iTunes. And right after I say goodbye, we're going to play this R. Kelly song, "The Zoo," because it's the most fucking ridiculous, brilliant thing that's ever happened, and exactly what we're talking about when it comes to celebrity turning someone into a crazy person. All right. Love you, bitches.
Free, wanna sex, there's nothing like